Oh, it's all right. I must have just clicked it twice. It's okay. It is working. You are now being recorded.
Hello, people of the internet. Three episodes spoilt.
Spoilt?
Spoilt. I enjoyed these last three episodes a lot more than
I thought they were really good.
Yeah, there we go. This is why, if you persevere with this series 4, you will come back. You know, but it's that middle. The sort of first three quarters of series 4 should be, it shouldn't have been so many, you know. It's like they were stretching it out to more episodes when they could have just done what they did with the
I
previous
think the
stuff.
first couple of episodes and the last three were this season's, and there was a lot of filler in the middle, which could have been something else, I think.
Yeah,
But yeah, these three episodes, we sort of chose the exact wrong time to watch them all in one
yeah,
go because this
exactly, yeah.
eight. I watched eight, and I was like, "That's a great episode. That's up there with the good episodes," you know.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking when I was watching them. I was thinking, oh, yeah, we're putting them all together at a time when there probably is more to talk about in all of them than there has been all series, you know. But let's
I
crack
don't
on with
know.
that,
Like,
you
I
know.
mean, in my mind, they're all it's merged together as one episode.
Yeah, same
Well,
for me.
yeah, I know what you're saying because I watched it all in one go.
Like, I don't know because it might have been just like they weren't. They certainly picked up, but at the same time, I don't know if.
I don't think it was the way. I don't think. I think the weaker episodes, I think watching them together does help. But with these ones, I think they were just good episodes. I think it got back on track. I mean, I still don't hugely care about this season's arc, about the planet stuff, really.
Well,
That's the
like you
thing I
said, yeah,
did.
it's what you said, nothing really changes. It's like,
No.
right,
Well,
okay.
we can list the thing that cha things that changed. First of all, which I'm quite surprised at, to be fair, Avasrella lost the election.
Oh, did you expect her to win?
I think that's
Oh, did you expect that to turn around at the last minute, did you?
I mean, that's the way these things usually go,
I
right?
suppose it is, yeah.
And she was doing that speech at the end, which was like, oh, this is like heartfelt Avasrella. She's going to turn it around with a
Yeah, it was
speech.
like
I was
real.
like,
It was like real Avasarala again at the end, though, as well. Not this
yeah,
whatever. She...
but then we find out from a conversation with the husband that was actually very cynical. That was very cynical, politician-y and planned.
That's
I think
always
her
Avasarala,
husband
though.
is a bit clueless, to be honest.
He's a bit of a prick, but he was right. Like she tacitly admits that yeah, that was just calculation. I just yeah. Like not that doesn't mean she didn't mean it, but you can mean something and also it be strategic, right?
Yeah, and frame things and push them in a certain,
Okay,
you know,
maybe I'm being a bit apologetic here,
I mean,
but
I still like Avasrella. I still
I
think
know, but yeah, she's herself again by the end of the series, which I liked. You know, because
she's also
we talked
sorry,
about
go on,
that
Chris.
already that she'd been, you know, she seemed like a different character almost at some point in this series, you know. Sorry,
Yeah,
Chris, yeah.
definitely, but she I kind of got the impression that she was looking at all the fallen marine. Was it Marines on the
Yeah, it was the Marines from that from that ship that they got the where Marco what tricked them into attacking a ship that he wasn't actually on, yeah. And then blew it up.
And I think I don't know that to me maybe did it not just like hit her a bit more in authentically, you know, that's
I think it did hit her, but also the what comes out is the reason she initiated that mission was political.
Oh, okay, yeah.
She was like they didn't really have. I mean, the general says it all. They didn't have the intel that you would want going into a mission like that. They went in sort of recklessly and without planning. And she wanted a win. She wanted a I've
Yeah,
taken the terrorist down
she believed
to win the
the
election.
intelligence officer.
Hang on a minute.
The intelligence officer was, oh, we don't know anything, but confidence is high, which is bullshit. For say, it was a bullshit phrase to say,
Yeah, hang
we're
on a
not taking
minute.
responsibility for it, but we're going to go, yeah, they're honest.
Yeah, they said like when the missions were being presented, the options were being presented, she th it, there was no indication to me at least that this was a high risk mission. I thought these were expert Marines that were going to do a
Well, the
job they
general
signed
doesn't
on
say
to
that, though.
do.
The general says we're if the general says right, they take out the ship, she has no idea whether she got them or not. She's definitely killed some civilians. It's you know that option just shouldn't really have been on the table. I couldn't if she'd taken that option, it would have been the show would have been waste, you know, completely destroyed. I think because there's no way Avasarala would have even done that unless she if she knew he was there, if there was 100% confidence that he was actually on the ship. maybe she'd take that to not risk the soldiers. But she knew what she was doing. The other option was risking a squad of soldiers, squad of Marines, to go in and attack that ship. But it was a trap. Marcos set a trap. It wasn't on there. Everything went to fuck, and they blew up. Somebody blew up the ship. Probably that was the plan from the start.
Yeah, I do agree that when they first presented it, it did seem like more of a reasonable thing to do than what the general presents it as. But it does. I think the balance of that is that the intel, they didn't have enough intel, and they didn't plan it enough. And yeah. she was going for the quick.
Yeah, she wanted to grab this opportunity, which was exactly what Marco wanted. It's literally exactly what Marco wanted, to trap them, to make an action.
It's the kind of thing she was always critical of President Mann for doing.
It's doing whatever the last thing that was suggested by advisors, sort of thing. Yeah. She called him a fucking bobblehead, you know.
But I don't mind political maneuvering. I don't mind political points using, so long as you're doing it for the right reasons. And I do think Avasarala, given what we've seen of the proton molecule, I think both positions are valid. Gao's position is valid, and Avasarala's position is valid. You know, maybe the proton molecule is still dangerous. It's already killed hundreds of thousands of belters.
I thought we were just talking about the Marco thing.
No. The reason why she lost the election.
Should we go through the gates?
Like, series was man-made. You can't blame that on the proton molecule. That was
We don't really know whether.
No, that was Jules Pierre Mao. He put all of those people. He had the.
I agree with that. Of course,
came in like.
But if we go to a place where the proton molecule is, we don't know that it's not going to do that kind of thing again, or something like it. I lean towards Gao, but it's not an invalid position.
And the only thing we've seen it do of its own accord is build into that intergalactic travel.
It was only turned into a weapon by humans and started destroying a planet and the moon.
It always had that roadside picnic thing of a disregard for it. Doesn't seem to think of human life as valuable.
But neither does radiation or gravity or shit.
No, but this thing has a consciousness. This thing is, you know.
I don't know. We don't know. We can I lean
towards Gao, but I'm saying being cautious of it is not an invalid position. It's not an irrational.
But there's being cautious, and then there's making everyone else be cautious.
Yeah, yeah. Saying like nobody can do anything is.
Well, her job. I mean, she says her job.
Sorry.
Her job is to protect the people. That's part of what she's there for.
Yeah, but how but can she shouldn't? Yeah, the blockade was an arbitrarily inner thing. If independent scientists from anywhere want to go and investigate stuff,
okay, I'll put it this way: it's not beyond the realms of possibility. It's certainly not impossible, but I think it's also not inconceivable that you could go through these rings and trigger something that literally wipes out the entirety of humanity.
That was what they were trying to stop.
The proton molecule is doing something else that it wants to do, and in order to achieve that goal, it's just wiping out humanity as part of what it's doing. Like, that's not.
Well, it's not only not inconceivable. It is actually one of the things that was discussed when they did the final shutdown of the planet.
Yeah.
So the question would then be: do we find proton molecule on the other planets or not? Or are the rings, now that they're built, are they just like a machine that does this? A non-malleable machine.
It could just be. You send one science crew through, and that's what triggers it. Like that's not ridiculous in this universe. No, so I think she's erring on the sides of caution and going like, okay, maybe it's a relatively small risk, but if it's a risk that literally wipes out humanity, then maybe we shouldn't, or at least think very hard about where we do. I mean, again, I don't agree. I agree with Gao. I think you can't curtail humanity like that. It doesn't work. But it's not unreasonable.
What if like a space ferret came? What if we had space ferrets that just roamed around space and they went into the ring? Then it would just be some complete force of nature. What if some space debris went into the ring?
Yeah, but a bit of debris might even just pass through.
I mean,
bit of debris, you know.
But you prevent what you can prevent, right?
I don't know why I went with space ferrets.
I was thinking more something like asteroids, comets.
No, space ferrets, absolutely.
Space ferrets is also a good... that's a thing.
It's a obviously a hypothetical space ferrets, obviously.
Well, you don't have your own space ferrets.
I can't afford them.
I've got them, but you can't see them obviously because they're outside the atmosphere.
Also, I got to point out, "Go with Gao" is a rubbish slogan, right? For a start,
it's literally "I like Ike."
I'm with her, to be honest. I was getting
"I'm with her" was awful as well.
But she could have gone with "Gao's the time."
Oh, "Gao's the time" is great.
Yeah.
Oh my god, you should be a fiscal operative in this world. Yeah. Ready, steady, Gao.
Yeah, ready, steady, Gao. Anything like that? You've got a whole canvas to work with, and she went with "I'm with Gao." God, I'm honestly sure
that's deliberate on the part of the writers, you know, to make it
maybe.
But I do like. I think it was. I think I was surprised because the way these things usually go is: she gives a cool speech. She realizes who she is. She goes back to being true to herself. She gives a good speech and she wins the election. And I like that they didn't do that. And I was surprised by it first time through. Yeah.
First time through, it's a surprise. But I mean,
I like Gao. It's not, again, they didn't do the obvious thing of, like, you know, Eva Cirella is a good politician and she's up against the evil politician who wants to do evil things. That wasn't it at all.
No.
And I like that.
I'm looking forward to seeing what Gao has to offer. And also, to be honest, right, Eva Cirella was talking about, and I took a bit of a front to this when Eva Cirella was saying the only thing that we should have been talking about was the ring or something like that. And it's like Gao was bringing up, you know, basic subsistence and all that kind of stuff. That is like day-to-day worries of the majority of people on Earth is how they're getting by paycheck to paycheck.
But that's how politicians work these days anyway. They'll mention it all in a brief aside. They'll bring up some scapegoating and then they'll try to cover everything in a big picture, whether it's real or not. You know, so terrorism or war on drugs, you're trying to balance
everyday concerns, valid, you know, people not got enough to eat. I mean, actual concerns versus an existential threat. That is, I mean, that's part of the problem with green politics, I think, is green politics is bourgeois. And it's like, well, this is going to wipe out humanity. And you've got, you know, a single mother working two cleaning jobs going, well, I can't afford food. So, you know, like, you've got to have a politics that deals with both of those things in a code, which,
and that's very difficult.
It's socialism. But
but it's very difficult. They're afraid of that. Very difficult in our society for some reason.
Obviously the ring, existential threat, all that kind of stuff is important, but it's not like necessarily electorally important, right?
What do you mean by that?
People aren't going to swing their vote.
Some people will. Yeah, I mean, look at how much engagement most people who vote have with politics. It's like, even in this country, people will see something like, "Oh, Boris Johnson. Oh, he's that funny guy." For Taylor. Oh, Nigel Farage. Oh, he's that funny guy. That's how they vote. That's how a lot of people walk into the polling booth. They have no fucking clue about policies, and they just walk in and go for a name they recognise, and that's why big media pushes like the BBC backing Farage constantly and backing Boris Johnson before that. And that's why it worked, you know, because Sky, all the right-wing media did it, and then to be balanced, the BBC did it as well.
This is kind of a side issue, but the reason they put Farage on is because he's entertaining. If the left can be fucking entertaining, that's easy.
Just get somebody who's
fucking entertaining. Like, that's a failure on the left, not a... I don't entirely blame the media for that, given the system in which they operate. Like,
okay, yeah, I'm not. Somebody... Okay, I wasn't. Yeah, okay, I did blame the media for it. But what I'm saying is that's how. Yeah,
the media
regardless of blame, that's how the system happens. That's how it works.
Yeah.
And if you've got a big, subject that affects everybody, that's easier to talk about than things that will. Because if you're a rich person and a good bit of earth, you don't give a shit about food policies.
Okay, real world analogy, climate change.
Yeah.
How many, like, it is an existential threat. The public are generally on board with that. Like, I think in the UK it's something like 80%. Even in America it's 60-70%. Like, people get that it is an existential threat and it's going to wipe us out. But how many people vote based on it? Like, very fucking few.
Well, I was but talking
also,
about
just
this
as a side note on good news, we're actually not, UK specifically, not doing too bad on carbon emissions. I think I said this in previous episodes.
But, yeah, but again, but it's such a fucking low bar. It's by European standards and stuff. Like, everybody's doing fucking appalling.
And also on top of that, the current government are trying to fuck it up again.
The whole world is doing really fucking badly. Yeah.
But the UK government...
trying to bring some good news in there.
But there isn't good news because the UK government are undermining that as we speak. They're trying to... They're building another runway that nobody wants at Heathrow. They're trying to open more coal and oil stuff.
Have you seen those beavers that built a dam in Czechoslovakia?
Yeah, that was cool.
Sorry, Czech Republic, sorry.
Yeah, no, Czechoslovakia. No, you can't keep changing your fucking country's name every 5 seconds. It's Yugoslavia and it's Czechoslovakia.
Yes, Cymru.
the American
Apple
colonies.
Fruits.
The 13
marathon
colonies.
Marathon bars.
Yeah, exactly.
There's only four channels on the telly.
There's only two channels on the telly. Three channels. But I was going to say, talking about political, what should happen? Although it would be, it's like proportional representation and all these other ideas. The big parties wouldn't go for this because their entire purpose is to get the party in power so that they all get the turn at the trough. But what should happen is that when people go to vote, there should be not a test or something. That's intellectually unfair.
Yeah, yeah.
But there should be some run up to it where they have to choose policies rather than people.
Well, I mean, that's an argument, and many politicians over the years have argued against having political parties. And I think it's on paper it makes sense, but people are going to group together based on class interests.
No, I've evolved on this issue a few times. So I'm against the political parties, I'm phrasing this like I'm five. so I've gone to and from on this, but it's okay for people to group, but that group has to be as casual and unenforceable as possible. So,
the whip system is the problem with the big parties.
Or one party, you know, with factions within that party, right? So you got some sort of like way of administering it, but it's fine to have groups and political factions, but it's when they start having like things like whips and people being excluded and things like that. When you start,
I think in a classless society you could do that, but you are just parties will form based on shared class interests, and then the whips, and also like. I think the electorate are actually more politically sophisticated than they're often given credit for. I think people know their own conditions and know what they want, and they vote based on that.
The other thing,
you also want to like we can't learn the ins and outs of every policy implication. You want to vote for an ideology, so you want. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, these people are the capitalists, and if you're a capitalist, you vote for them. And these people are the socialists. And
yeah,
you know,
but political parties and ideologies don't line up one to one.
If there's a socialist party, I know that I can vote for the socialist party. We don't have.
If there's a socialist candidate, you can vote for the socialist candidate. Like you still use banners and labels and names.
Yeah,
but I think without a party, I don't think you can get anything done. Ultimately, I think parties are almost like a natural formation within this system. You cannot prevent them from forming.
If you do have a genuine, if people were actually doing the jobs that they've been voted to do, then the party system would be much less powerful anyway, because people would come together on issues, regardless of the labels and party systems.
I mean, the problem right
the problem
now is not parties.
The party
the problem
overrules
right now,
that with whips and stuff, you know.
The problem right now is that we've got 3/4 neoliberal parties.
No. It's partly parties, because there are like my local Labour MP, not a terrible person, and I know that because I know them. The thing is, they're voting for all of the shit of Keith Starmer. right? Because they get whipped if they don't. If all of that kind of stuff fades away, again, I think that's the problem.
That's because the party system isn't like we're supposed to have parties that represent
we've
ideologies.
Got corrupt we've got party system as well as
we've got four parties that represent one ideology. That's the party system has broken, but I don't think the party.
But
they split.
But votes still get split in the House of Commons, so they're still disagreeing on stuff.
But there's the good news for me out of the last election was that a lot of these people who were purged from the Labour, so-called Labour Party, still managed to stand and get their seats. A lot of them did. There was eight or something like that that were independent. Winning. Yeah, and
I will suggest we're a bit off track and we have got a lot to talk about.
I tried with the beavers, but it didn't work.
That's all right. I'm not changing the format for other people's tardiness and deadlines. Sorry.
Okay.
We'd all vote Gow, right?
Yeah, I'd vote Gow.
I
liked how Ashford died. No, I didn't like that.
It was a good. It was a good death.
Can we go into that then? The whole thing. It was. He went on a crusade, basically, didn't he? He decided. Yeah. And also, I like that he backed Drummer up. When Fred Johnson came in and started.
She was in the room, she had the information, she made the right decision in the moment. Yeah. Even though he made the opposite decision, he knew that
worked. Well,
I love them too. I love when he comes to her and when she gives I've written the line, like I drink when I'm angry, not when I'm sad. And they have that little conversation, like, and he wants her to obviously come with him, and it's such a lovely relationship those two have.
Yeah, it's good.
I'd love to have seen them go on the crusade together.
I was thinking when I watched that, actually, when I see their great relationship, I wonder how old his daughter was in relation to him, and if he sees her kind of like a daughter, you know?
Obviously
not because. The daughter would have to die.
I'm sure that's in there, but I like that they don't over-egg that because that could have been
It's good to just have it in your head.
It's nice that it's just an ingredient rather than this is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. They don't hit you over the head with it, yeah.
Yeah.
Because really, I feel...
They give you all the bits and you put it together yourself, you know, thinking about his daughter and everything. And, I know what you mean, that you like how he died. Like, he didn't, you know... I mean, Marco was kind of... actually expecting somebody like Ashford to beg for his life, and he's like, fuck you. No.
And he went out singing.
And he went out singing his song that he sung to his daughter. Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he also, the other clever thing, he made the little message, he set up the recording and everything to give them a trail back to Marco.
And also to reveal Marco's plan as well, I think, importantly.
Yeah, well, this was cool, because, I think it had always been set up, and watching it through again, it's easier for us to spot Marco's plan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm.
You know, because you put all together every. I mean, it was all there from episode one of series one. Stealth technology being stolen. They talk about having, you know, more than once they mention asteroid watching to protect the planet and stuff like that. And what if somebody was to actually do that maliciously? You know, it's all dropped.
One of the very first episodes of season one, where Avicerella's on the roof with her grandchild. I'm scared of people who throw rocks or something. They're talking about shooting stars, and Avicerella says, "I'm scared of people who throw rocks." Yeah. It's telegraphed right at the beginning of season one.
But it's so cool. I mean, it's a horrible thing because obviously this has got the potential to kill billions of people firing at Mars or Earth. But the stealth coating and activation on the asteroid that they've got and everything was so cool. You know, it's pretty cool. I think that's where a lot of the effects budget was saved for this whole sequence. You know? And then, you know, but even up until then, Ashford doesn't conceive that he might throw the rock at one of the inner planets, Ceres, and Tycho,
doesn't he?
But from
as targets,
he thinks he's going to target them for. Yeah. I can sort of see why he would, but at the same time,
Are the moments where I like Marco, where he's saying this is the problem with Belters. You think too small. Yeah. Like
he's not wrong.
He's in a lot of ways, he's right.
He's absolutely right. Yeah, because if they still fight amongst themselves, because he was expecting Marco to be taking a sort of factional view of things and attack other OPA places. He was expecting him to attack the bases of either. Dawes or Johnson. That's what he was expecting, the factional thing. And then he says, no, my target is Earth.
I mean,
and also
some ways,
we discover that Mars are actually, some people on Mars are actually involved as well, which they've kind of been vague about all the way through.
In some ways, Marco represents what Drummer and Ashwood were striving for, which is a post-factional OPA. He is a post-factional OPA acting in the interests of the OPA rather than in the interests of any particular, you know, faction within the OPA. And attacking, if they can cripple Earth, and because Mars and I think the reason why the Mars are working with the Belters is Mars is more like the Belters. As soon as the ring gates open, and it's evident that, I mean, Bobby talks about it a lot, it's evident that Mars is just another uninhabitable rock, essentially, the same situation. But they're more resourced than the Belters, but they're in the same position. We've got these habitable planets, then they're kind of in the same boat. So it's them versus the Earthers.
It just changed the boundary line in the way towards the sun a bit.
I mean, this ties into the thingy. Is it Eli Martin's?
Esai Martin.
Esai, that's it. Because I really empathised with that. Like, he has a family. Obviously.
That was one of the things I was kind of like, I was being a bit coy about, and I had to, you know, I had to sort of hold back on that. But yeah, you guys were calling that right. But you know, it was exactly what it seemed like.
Did it change your perception of him when you see his home life?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah,
I think so.
I wasn't wholly surprised. I was surprised that it's like, you came to my home with my family and he's not mad. Like, I'd be a bit mad if my criminal thingies showed up.
No, but he's trying to keep things as normal as possible for his family. And by this time, he's taken to Bobby, I think, quite a lot, you know?
I think he's taken to Bobby. And also, I think what's made evident here is he's not a particularly gifted or experienced criminal. That's not his natural. He's not really a criminal. I think it's circumstances.
He's taken advantage of circumstances.
Yeah. He's not. You know, he's not a mob boss. He's just, you know, his naivety going into this last operation that Bobby, you know, that's part of that. He's just kind of a dude.
Yeah.
But they did kill that dock worker, we find out.
But it was a
self-defense-y, fell over kind of
from
situation.
Lily. It was Lily that did it.
Yeah, that's a little bit like
Lily. I like Lily in this episode a lot.
She's learned the
front drops, and you actually see her for the first time, I think, and she's just a kid. She's just a kid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And she invites Bobby to like come to series with her.
I've got a cousin series with Gary really here, you know.
A little spin-off adventures of Bobby and Lily.
They could be a good team, and there's another
political thing. Now, see, this I think is another thing that parallels real world stuff brilliantly, is the way that the news portrays what happened at the Martian docks is immediately framed as a terrorist attack. Not an accident, not, you know, it's immediately framed as a terrorist attack. And something takes off there as well. I've watched it quite a few times. I'm never quite sure where it is that takes off after the, I mean, I know who it is because obviously that's the people that were shooting at Bobby that go.
It's the stealth composites leaving to go to Marco.
I don't think it was it?
I think it is. Oh, I think is it? It is, yeah. Because that's the whole thing is a cover for smuggling out stealth composites.
Yeah, but
that's not the whole blowing.
I thought they had already long left Mars. You know?
I mean, that would make more sense.
But
if it's a cover for something, I guess they've got to be.
Doesn't somewhat, really matter which one it is, then. Yeah, it's just cover. But the news cameras, kind of like we're looking at the big explosion, and then they go, "Oh, there's a ship there." And But yeah, immediately it's it's some sort of attack and whatever, and it's. I mean, that's a sort of post 9/11 viewpoint, though, isn't it? Really, that something big happens. Yeah. It's, you know, often it is terrorism. I mean, we've had a few things that have been blown out of proportion like that, though. But all these kind of things play directly into the hands of governments like the Earth and Martian governments.
I rewatched the morning of 9/11 coverage recently, and what's striking about it is they don't even mention terrorism for hours. They think it's an accident. Even when the second plane goes in, they think it's some weird kind of accident. Like they're not even, it's not like the idea that this could be a terrorist attack is not even on that. Maybe one or two.
I bet
people,
if that was in another country, though, they would have jumped to that conclusion quickly.
Yeah.
Countries
used to being attacked.
But they're not used to being attacked directly. Yeah. And I mean, it was a terrible thing that happened. And I mean, obviously, this is going to come up. Well, let's not, I don't want to jump ahead since we've got three episodes of this to cover as it is. But massive terror attacks like that are, I mean, they are horrible. The terrorists, it is a terrible thing. But when you see from the other perspectives, it's quite interesting. Yeah. So when you see it from the perspective of the belters, as we do in this show, and you think, in comparison, I mean, how many people died on that day? It was like 3,000 or so, yeah? Which is a terrible death toll for a single thing to happen. But how many people died? Hundreds of thousands of people died in Iraq after that.
It was a response. Regardless of how you feel.
And the Gaza thing as well. It's literally massive. Well, it comes up in the thick of it when there's a little phrase that Nicola Murray uses to Malcolm Tucker. Because she thinks that he did something pretty, you know, he did stab her. He obviously, didn't really deny it or didn't really acknowledge it at the time. But he did something huge to fuck her over. And she describes it as a huge overreacting Israeli-style response. And I think that's that was well before, obviously well before the current ones. But this is it, though. Governments like the UK government, US government, the Israeli government and a few other, so-called Western governments do use these things for massive overreactions.
Purely strategically,
they make people think they're afraid and we're going to check.
Strategically, the overreaction as deterrent isn't the worst idea in the world, but when coupled with continual sort of chronic activity in the Middle East, for example, You've got to address both things. Yeah, make people fear attacking you. Okay, if that's how you want to behave, but also don't create the conditions for people to want to attack you all the time. But
they're making another. I can't remember where it is right now, but they're basically creating another Bin Laden right now on the world stage for everyone to see. Yeah. They've got somebody similar to what Bin Laden was in Afghanistan in the '70s, and they're. In the media and under governments, they're saying, "Oh, this is our hero," blah 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 blah, and they're going to shit on him 5 minutes down the road. We all know that. And and in the meantime, they're also creating all these martyrs. Mm-hmm. They're people are growing up with their homes bombed and their families destroyed, and then they're expecting them to somehow be grateful to the Israeli or the US or something. It's like, no, they're going to be fucking bitter and angry with you. What do you expect? You are creating these things. But that's what they want, isn't it? It's a forever war. Keeps your keeps your population in constant fear, which is easier to control. And it keeps selling weapons and giving them a reason to giving them excuses to go in to places where there's resources.
It's a very weird form of socialism where you create a lot of government jobs through having a perpetual fucking war.
Yeah, so it's sort of weird.
Socialism for the military and for corporations and brutal capitalism for everybody else. Yeah. Anyway, let's get back to Eli.
We're doing all right for time, also, so I thought I'd put my tuppence worth into all that.
Because
I think it's very important, especially in the light of the Markle thing particularly. If you compare that to Al-Qaeda or the IRA or whatever,
Well, since we've touched on it, so at the very end of the three episodes, we see Marco's plan of launching 9 asteroids at the Earth over a period of, a couple of days or something, I guess. What's your reaction to that, Chris, as seeing it for the first time?
You've seen the actual... Yeah, this is the meat of Marco's thing, isn't it?
I'm sort of... I almost mentally put that on the back burner for next series.
It is the cliffhanger.
Yeah, I gotta be honest. I was like, okay, that sounds like his plan. I get it. Yeah, I wasn't.
Well, the other thing, the hijacked ship was trying to take out the asteroid spotting system. Remember as well to reduce the chances of this failing even more. Yeah. They've got stealth technology,
I think this might make me actually evil, but the reason I was against, when we were like, would you airlock Marco or not.
Hmm.
This is why I wanted to keep him alive, so that he could do this. Because I think he's right. I think strategically he's right, and also Earth kind of fucking deserves it.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the people of Earth, to be fair. The people.
That's the problem. Yeah, that's the problem. Is like the people in the underground in London or the people in the Twin Towers didn't deserve it. Mm. But you know, and this is what annoys me. This is why terrorism is still a terrible way to deal with things. It's a terrible tactic. Because you're not going to get people on either. You might get people on your side a little bit in your own community, but you're not going to get people on your side elsewhere.
Well, if this plan goes according to plan, I think it's a step up from terrorism. I think this decimates Earth and renders it done as a power. It
takes a lot of power away from them.
It's enough of an attack to just put them out of the picture.
But if the 9/11 attacks had hit, you know, the White House, the Pentagon, the Capitol, all that sort of thing.
Whole of New York.
Yeah, that would have been much more symbolic and would probably not have galvanized people in America so much. They would still be riled up by the media and the right-wing appetite for, you know, revenge and everything, but the fact that it was civilians just basically handed the American government the war on a plate. Because they could say, "Oh, it's you that have attacked. It's our people. It's our freedom."
I think my understanding—I've never really looked into it—but my understanding is there are a lot of sort of government offices in the Twin Towers, like CIA and various security.
Well, there's a lot of large financial organizations as well. But again, though, the people that work there, okay, there's probably an awful lot of arseholes in those financial.
And
places.
Again, not to justify, I think targeting civilians is always evil.
Yeah,
but from the point of view of the people launching that attack, that. The US has been targeting their civilians for decades.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier. Disproportionate, you know. It's disproportionate by a huge margin. But for some reason people are kept as back to the in fear. People are kept in fear. The system of keeping people in fear of things like terrorism and immigrants and all that sort of thing keeps you afraid. Meanwhile, they're making it hard for people to survive day to day, so that they're just bamboozling people and making it hard for them to make proper long term decisions, because they're stuck in a rut of having to make short term decisions just for their own survival, you know, whilst the resources are all there, just sitting there, you know. Shelter said something like there's five times as many empty properties as there are homeless people in the UK. Five times as many. So it's not building more fucking houses and giving contracts to corporations to deal with all this is not helping the homeless situation.
Well, it's the market. It's the market response, isn't it? Rather than the
that's one of the problems with Keith and his know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so would is the right thing Marco to do to just say everyone has no more than one house per person or whatever, and then just give the houses. Or bring them into social housing.
No, as far as I'm concerned, it's a very simple. Partly do that, partly compulsory buybacks, but part of it is just simple. Just tax the hell out of empty properties. Don't make it something that people can just have. You know, whilst it's a resource that's a basic human right, don't have it as a capital resource that's actually easy to deal with.
It should not be expensive and complicated. You've got to create a mechanism to make it not a speculative asset.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and compulsory buybacks is just
Expanse.
We didn't have
too many real world connections in this one.
Well, yeah, okay. I mean, it is very much, isn't it? Yeah.
All right, I've got a question. Right, what was the Miller thing? Right, the Miller thing. Right, I want to talk about the Miller thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
How do we know which Miller's which?
Right, this is another one of the things I've had to walk back. I'm going to have to walk back on and admit Miller does still exist. Okay, he does. But there's also a Miller being controlled by the proto system thing.
Yeah.
And that's what we finally found out, is that the reason they're able to use Miller is because they've kept his consciousness as the vehicle. For their plans. So he's still in there and he's managed to get out. And then, so the Miller, when you see him without the hat, that's really Miller. When you see it with the hat again, that's the investigator, which is under the control of the protomolecule.
See, now what clicked for me out of all of this is why you were so keen on calling him the investigator.
Yep, because it was. when the dead Miller has a hat, it's the investigator.
Okay.
And I was just trying to keep on it without giving any, without saying things.
You didn't like, give it away. You didn't give it away. You made it.
The first time Force Ghost Miller turns up, I think that Jim says, "What's with the hat?"
Yes.
The hat is alluded to a lot. The hat is a symbol all the way through the show for Miller, for various things.
Yeah. So I'm a bit curious now.
Can I jump just before I forget? It's a small side detail. The bit where when Jim says the last time I spoke to Miller, the thing I said to him was rain doesn't really taste of anything, and he's quite upset about that. But then when they get rid of the last bit of inertified protomolecule, he does actually give a little bit of a eulogy and an apology. Yeah.
I think telling him about rain was kind of sweet as well.
I thought that was good that he gave him an answer to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shows he was thinking about him and, you know, bearing, you know, thinking about Miller himself.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and he's also got the Belter haircut.
Yes, which I think is because we talked at that point in the show where there's a symbolic change where Miller becomes a Belter.
Once he goes away from series, yeah, he becomes a Belter.
Miller.
So we're supposed to accept that. There's no like I shouldn't be cynical that the Miller that we see without the hat is not in fact another way to manipulate.
I think it's reasonable to have questions,
I think from the audience point of view, Miller is Miller and the investigator is the entity or whatever you want to call it.
My follow-up question is the Miller that the investigator, is the investigator automatically bad?
No.
I think
it's more complicated than Miller without the hat is Miller and the investigator is not Miller. I think there's a lot of Miller in there and it was always a battle. And sometimes he may be talking to Miller, sometimes he's more talking. Because he literally describes the process in broad terms, like he's pulled apart and put back together, pulled apart, put back together.
Yeah, he told them that.
When Jim
first asks how he's seeing them and he says,
it in this three episodes as well. He was remade over and over again. So there's going to be different proportions of Bella, different aspects of Miller. I said Bella the first time. I don't think it's a clear cut. This is not Miller and he's bad, and this is Miller and he's Miller. But there's some nuance in there.
But there's quite a lot more separation in this particular incident.
In this particular, yeah, for sure, yeah, yeah.
And I like that Jim when Miller says, "Oh yeah, under deck plate, blah blah," there's a bit of blue goo still, and he goes, "Ah, that's how
it makes sense."
That it makes sense. Yeah. That was his connection to Miller when he was on the ship. Yeah.
But is Miller dead now?
As far as we can tell, yes, because they've destroyed all the protomolecule technology within that system.
And he also mentions putting the other 100,000 people to rest, doesn't he?
Putting them to rest.
I mean, again, reasonable to have questions regarding that, but yeah, as far as what the show is trying to say, he's dead. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because I don't know if you want to say this or what. Do we see the investigator in future episodes?
I honestly can't remember.
Oh fuck, we do. Okay.
No. That's 100%
genuine. You've said that one before.
No, when I say that, I didn't answer.
I just left it.
It's usually true. I can't. I honestly can't remember. Katniss salute. I swear on the memory of Katniss Everdeen.
You've told more barefaced lies than that.
See, I don't. I tend to be more sneaky and spinny. Drew tries to lie.
you were just saying things that seem to, with a degree of confidence that you sort of. Yeah. I mean,
we're just like messing with your head, Chris. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I get it.
My understanding at this point in the show, and this is going to make you disbelieve me more, but my understanding at this point in the show is I don't think there's, I think he is, I don't think there's a way he can come back. I think he has been everything that contained him has been destroyed. And I don't recall him being in future episodes. That's the truth.
I don't recall. I did not have. Well, I mean,
if it helps to make things any more confusing and unclear for Chris's benefit, check out the bits where the investigator stroke Miller is traveling around space. You know, the little zhoosh, zhoosh thing, the sort of protomolecule view things that you get. Check those out in your own time, and you see what you think.
Also, to sow more doubt here, I think it's been fairly conclusively proven that the protomolecule can act through time. So the fact that he doesn't exist anymore might not all be all that meaningful, since it can act through time.
You are just fucking with Chris, man.
No, I'm fucking with Chris. Yeah.
But yeah, you check out this series particular. I can't remember if it happened in series 3 or not. But definitely throughout this series, a few times, you know that you're getting a bit of a Miller thing because you're seeing the wherever he was to wherever he goes. You know, if you pay attention to the little flashes of things, you'll see where Miller's spirit or whatever is traveling to and from.
Okay. Also, one of the things that I was a little unsure about, when Holden comes out the top of the structure.
Mm-hmm.
He's obviously moved from one structure to a different structure.
Yeah, they're 800 kilometers away. Yeah, that power zoopy purple whoosh tunnel thing.
The whoosh tunnel.
Four of them go through that. So
there's a big panning out scene, which is absolutely cinematically gorgeous, where you see. Is it a city?
I think so.
Yeah, it's an ancient civilization that's been uncovered by the tsunami. Yeah,
I think we're supposed to read a couple of things there. Yeah, I think it's a city. This is where we don't even know what form they took. Whether they were like energy beings or like, you know, ants or, you know, we don't know
or
what they were.
Giants or whatever. Yeah, we don't.
And I think we're supposed to read that this is a city, and I think we're supposed to. Because when they you know the big glowing anus thing that is the sort of MacGuffin for the end of the show, the end of the season, somebody either science lady who I want to talk about or Miller describe the things that the protomolecule people are at war with as even worse than the protomolecule people, which could just be a sort of throwaway
there's a little bit already been said in past episodes. If you've read the books, it's kind of more explicit that there are two factions that we don't know about until the game opens.
Yeah, but the point is she describes them as even worse than, which implies that the protomolecule people are not good people. And I think what we're supposed to read from when we see the revealed that what the planet was like, I think we're supposed to think this is a people who have a disregard for other life, other ecologies, other, you know, these are
evil. As far as I can see,
evil might be too far. And there's a lot in this episode about colonization. When Drummer talks about the Mormons having the pictures on the wall, and I can't remember what she says exactly, but she's talking about like they're romanticizing colonization. This is what the Earthers are. And I think that's sort of this is kind of a metaphor might be too strong, but I think we're supposed to think of the protomolecule people as kind of like bad. They come, they wipe out whatever's there, they pave over it, they're only interested in their own, you know. I think we're supposed to think of them as bad, I think, is the
point. Yeah, at least colonialists.
And obviously question ourselves, the badness in ourselves in response to that. Yeah. You know, do we have those same.
Also, the other thing that's worth pointing out is that obviously any other life forms of the planet that had started to evolve since then have been wiped out. So whatever Miller did, or well, in fact, no, the tsunami point from the point of the tsunami. So from whatever caused the island to explode is what killed the planet, really, for this time round. Obviously, the war between the two factions of aliens killed it.
A great flood.
Yes,
the slug survived.
Eh?
The slug survived.
Well, the water. Yeah, waterborne life has probably survived just fine.
The ones that Amos didn't get.
Mm. Eh?
The ones that Amos didn't get, at least.
Yeah, he was going to be.
He was waging a little bit of a war against the.
See, the thing
slugs.
is, the, You know, this was a bit of a subpar series because both the eye thing and the slugs thing were they just thrown in for added peril?
The slugs thing is a bit weird. It's again, it exists in the story, but
it's a nice kind of short story style sci-fi setup. You're blind and there's this thing that can kill you just by dropping on you. But they didn't do that episode.
They could have had that appear a few episodes earlier. Yeah, the whole thing just seems like the middle was just stretched too thin.
And there
was a fair good, you know, some nice setup at the start and really good climaxes and set pieces and, you know, as you say, epic sci-fi stuff, and you know, and it's just it's a weird series in that respect.
The last three episodes are genuinely great though. Toe cable stuff, it was exciting, all the excitement that, was good, that I was
something different. Simple like that can still make an exciting episode.
Look, sorry Chris,
sorry, I was wondering, is that now, because they're staying on the Belters are staying on the on Illus and trying to make the best of it, but there is a, albeit needs work, city there for the taking. Like,
and they did right at the end of the episodes, they did seem to be using it, didn't they? They seem to be living in it, which is interesting. You know how they sort of set up camp there with the sort of polythene roofs and stuff? That seemed a bit more, towards the end, that seemed a bit more expanded. They were going to use these things as buildings, essentially.
And I mean, you know, the fact that they found a big lithium deposit, they're bound to find huge deposits of other things, literally because of the structures.
What's that made of?
Tear that tower apart because it's made of, you know, iron and steel, you know, source of steel or whatever. Maybe even unknown alloys, you know.
I think it's unknown. I think they say at some point, it's an unknown material,
They could. That's kind of nice.
Yeah, I like that. I think there's contained within that whole colonial, the metaphor with colonialism, and then we see like essentially what is the worst version of colonialism, a race that barely even recognizes other forms of life as life and just paves over the planet. And I think it is like we've got to be better than that. Yes, you have. You change the place that you inhabit, but you've got to have some fucking respect for it as well.
And also, back on the Rosinante, where they get rid of the black bars, which I don't understand because there's obviously this face-off between Mertry and Amos.
Yeah, I love that little bit where Amos is like...
Which is feels a little bit Western-y. I don't know if I do love it. Oh,
it's from Amos's face, you know when he gets his hand totally, back?
I'm going to go try it out right now.
Love that.
I thought he was going for a wank.
No, that's it. That's 100%.
That's what it is. Yeah.
No, he's not. He's going to punch.
I know what I mean is that's 100% what you're supposed to think.
Oh right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's kind of like a double joke because
But you know, he had the speech about the post office and da 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 da. Basically, your standard defending colonialism speech, right? Straight out of a Disney movie. But then it's like, I don't know, Amos didn't need to just go in and basically rough him up with excuses. Like, he could just leave it be.
Also, you get the Amos meme face as well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The bloodied mouth and the
bloodied mouth and the wide eyes.
Yes, that's it. Crazy eyes. Thank you for that.
I'm a little bit with you on that, honestly. It kind of fits Amos's personality, but not really. It fits a superficial version of Amos's character.
It fits what we think about Amos ever in the film. I think the whole point of that is that we as an audience get some sort of revenge on Mertry.
We get a bit of catharsis
because we know that he's actually going to go to trial and basically get a rap.
I don't personally, but I think that's the intent.
I think
maybe they were worried, like, he's the villain, he's the baddie, and he doesn't really get his comeuppance. Like, you know, Holden's thing, like, you know, let's try him, like,
get
blah,
to,
blah,
get
blah,
him
very
to try,
liberal.
Yeah.
Like, it's not how these things usually go. So they were trying
to try him or shoot him, but like
they were trying to have both. They were trying to have both, and I agree.
They knew they weren't going to shoot him, but
I think where that nailed that. I think this season is made with seems to have less confidence behind it than previous season because when they brought Mao in, and Holden just like pushes him to his knees, so he's kneeling in front of Avasarala. That's cathartic.
Yeah.
That's an appropriate catharsis.
Shooting him wouldn't have had as much effect. Humbling him is exactly what these kind of people need. And that's why these kind of nut jobs usually kill themselves. You know, that's why Hitler shot himself in a bunker. He didn't want to be exposed.
They did have the very Western style gunfight. You know, two dudes facing each other and a quick draw gunfight between Holden and Murtry.
Yeah.
But again, it didn't punch that. They didn't punch it home and have.
Also, like one of the things that sort of hit me a little bit is that Murtry, when he's not in his fatigues. Like, he's a very slender guy, right? Like,
when he's facing off against Amos, you're like, really?
Burn Gorman is not a big chap, and you know,
like, if you get the jump on somebody bigger, maybe, but like, just a straight up fist fight, like, Amos is gonna fucking turn you to talcum powder,
yeah, exactly. Like, it's just,
and also, and I felt, I, go on, sorry.
So I didn't feel like I felt a little bit like, well, like. Like it was like a bigger power taking advantage of a smaller power. I feel like it was a little bit like you know.
Yeah, yeah. At that point, I agree. I don't really think that's in character from Amos. He didn't.
No, not at this point. Yeah, but it seems like early Amos come back for
maybe, maybe if he'd been in that room, he wanted to just talk to him about girlfriend he shot and get Sandra. You know resolve that in some way, find some closure with that, and then Murtry goes for him.
But Murtry's not going to go for him because he's obviously.
No, well, he goads Murtry into him. Murtry does go for him. I mean, he does, but it's extremely.
Yeah, but only when he's been told that we're having a fucking scrap right
now.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
He's trying to get the first hit because that's the only chance you've got against. But no, this is an echo of something we talked about previously with the season. But for me, so just reimagine this season, right? Delete Murtry from it.
Mm-hmm.
And A. No major differences. Doesn't change anything major. And B, a better season, I think. We just take Murtry out of it completely and have the tension be between the RCE just trying to do their job, that, you know, as having the sort of opinion...
Without the cartoon villain. The cartoon villain.
We are just the authority here. We're the legitimate authority. The Belters aren't. And having that tension without the cartoony representation of that tension. And then like, Murtry has no other effect on the plot. And I think that's a better season. Just take Murtry out of it. No. The act is great.
Right? Yeah, the acting's top notch. Yeah.
It's nothing to do with the acting.
It's just,
again, Burn Gorman plays that kind of completely unlikable character brilliantly. You know, they even sort of make a joke about it themselves, and he says, maybe I've just got that kind of face or something.
that's the problem with The Expanse. Yeah. I don't think The Expanse really has room for many characters that are completely unlikable. Everybody's. You want to understand everybody.
Yeah.
And Murtry's cartoony.
I mean, he could have even dialed back the cartooniness, right?
Yeah. Like,
he could have just been more of a standard corporate goon, you know.
But it's in the script. It's not the presentation. It's the script that has that.
Well, it's both, you know, yeah. But like,
yeah.
He very much presented himself as a colonialist in the traditional explicitly. Stereotype. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What ho? Let's go and show those natives what for. What not? You know, there's.
Well, he was, bringing a British guy in as if it's sort of peanut meets door open.
Yeah. And particularly, I mean, I got that from the very first introductory scene of Murtry. Like, the guy that died, but he was talking to, he almost felt like a World War I general or something to that effect, you know? General Melchett.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you can take him out and have a better season. Like, he doesn't serve any.
Yeah, he just doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't purpose. Really.
I kind of warmed a little bit to the Doctor Lady.
I loved her in these episodes. I loved her.
She got at least part of what she wanted as well. She got an experience that she really envied. Jim's experience of the contact, and she got a bit of that, albeit, you know, she's obviously not going to get more of it because they've destroyed that and the for now.
But she was
she might get it every time. She might still get a little push of it every time she goes through the gate. Yeah, so, you know, because that seems to be the technology.
She was fierce and she was brave and she was just a cool. She's got great eyebrows as well, and like a great. She was a great character in these three episodes, particularly the last one.
Yeah, she was. They didn't really use her very much early on, except as a sort of.
But they did. I think they did lay the groundwork for her behaving. Person, you know. They did lay the groundwork for her behaving this way. Like, she's got that kind of like unsatiable curiosity and bravery to a fault.
Whatever you do, don't touch the eye of Sauron.
It was a really good, again, talking about the effects budget going on, that thing where she's falling through space, that was really cool. I like that,
I'm going to assume she's not in future episodes, but you don't have to tell me one way or the other. She just feels like a character of this.
Oh, another good brave hero-y moment is Naomi going after what's her face when she falls off the spaceship. Love that.
Oh yeah.
Naomi just hooks on, jumps out, is like, "I've got you, don't worry about it." That was fucking cool. I love that.
Sorry, I've got distracted by the
Naomi rescuing what's her face when she tumbles off the
Lucia.
Something like that. Yeah, that was it. Because there's not been a lot of good Naomi moments in this season, and I think that's a good one. That was cool.
Yeah, she was just kind of like
a bit victim-y.
Yeah, and it's not.
It's not quite the right word, but weak.
I know what you're saying. Really,
and also I liked Alex a little bit.
Yeah, Alex was slightly likable for 10 minutes in this episode. In this last few episodes, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, I would be really pissed if someone fired a naughty bomb at me, like, you know, like a naughty bomb, like it's a subversive bomb.
Yes, yeah.
And I'd be like,
a cheeky bomb,
and it's like, you can't. That's, you know, no fair fight in space.
Yeah.
Come on.
No, very annoying. Yeah, that was a very annoying thing, and I enjoyed his reaction to it. Yeah.
Yeah. But they all got tried and everything, and Lucia and her
husband get back together, and the daughter goes off to learn stuff.
But they steal the ugly kid, so
somehow they've got that weird looking kid.
Well, look, the kid didn't, you know, spare kid.
Again,
they just lost one.
He's definitely an alien.
Yeah.
Still, 100% a fucking alien.
Well, that'll be some sort of children's television program, raising aliens or something.
The bit when Holden and Miller are going down towards the Eye of Sauron, and Miller's tired, he says he's not slept for 3 days. He does a great job of acting tired.
Yes.
That was convincing tiredness, and that's not. I think it's like being drunk. It's not an easy thing to act.
Yeah, I'm going to say. I think he's done that sometime in the show at some point as well. He's done a drunk thing, or no? No, maybe I'm thinking of Amos doing a drunk thing. I'm sure there's one scene where one of them is meant to be drunk as well, and again, somewhere. It's a mark of good acting that you kind of believe it. It's, you know, it's not.
Yeah.
Because being drunk is a sort of exaggerated state anyway. So it's you know, how to quite pitch that, you know, to get the, you know.
Actors tend to just go for the slurred speech, which is a component of being drunk, but not really the main.
It's a lot of little micro things.
It's a very difficult thing to act. It is, like, just trying to act drunk is hard, but yeah, no, he does tired great. Like, he just rests his head. Like, he looks fucking tired. He looks the right kind of tired, sleep deprived.
Yeah, and also, speaking of the way things look, Philip looks a lot like Naomi.
Yeah, they nailed that casting. Yeah,
or actually, Marco and Naomi. He looks
they've cast it well.
Like, he's got Naomi's hair.
I think, like, Drew and I have both said that neither of us is that bothered about.
I was a bit like that. You go, Philip, we're supposed to care about him now.
Yeah,
It's Philip.
Oh, right, yeah.
Spoilers, at no point do I care.
Yeah, no point do I change my mind. No.
Bring your son to work day.
But so, they also half-ass a thing that it's been in bits and bobs, but one of the spaceships is named the Pella or something like that, and Pella was the capital of Macedonia. Philip
was the king of Macedonia and Alexander the Great's son. It almost seems like Marco should have been called Philip, and Philip should have been Alexander, but then that would have been too on the nose. So they're sort of alluding to that without quite. It's a weird one.
There was also one of the. I don't know if you remember this. There was one of the. The Belter strike force that reminded me a little bit of Lopez from the first few episodes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it wasn't. I don't know how much he looked like him, and whether or not his light was just on the helmet, just looked the same. Kind of like that sort of very, very pale under light kind of.
I can see. Yeah, I can see. How did you feel about Ashford's, like, when they sort of breach and he jumps out backwards with the
badass.
That's very cool. I also noticed he was the only one not wearing a helmet,
which is also cool.
So he was, I don't know.
Weird goth lady.
I see that. Yeah,
I thought that was weird.
I think that's a lady.
That's a lady. It's a weird goth lady. I call her weird goth lady. Yeah. No, lipstick's not necessarily an indicator of a lady, but I think when you see her before she gets her suit on, that's a lady.
But no, Ashford doing the cool "I'm a pirate" leaping out backwards, firing off pistols. I thought it was silly, but fucking great and deserved. Like, he deserved that.
He
moment.
Deserved a bit of that. Also, it gave the sort of the gravity situation thing. Because the same, once they capture him, he's stood in an airlock and they're at a right angle.
I think there's also interesting contrast between that breaching and the Marines, the UN Marines going for Marco. Very, like, it just shows Belters are at home in space. Like,
The unexpected angle to come out from.
Also, because of the low gravity, it didn't feel too contrived.
That's why it works, it's all of that stuff.
It looked cool as hell.
Belters being
and if it wasn't in space, I would say it's definitely contrived, but but not now. And also, they use it sparingly enough. That kind of stuff sparingly enough.
Yeah,
like, I've never seen anything in the I don't think I've seen anything in the previous series that was that stylistic.
And it makes sense for him to. You know, he's literally been a pirate. He's been doing this his whole fucking life. He understands the physics of that. It comes natural to him. Yeah, he's in his element. Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it just. And also, it's totally a believable way of going through a small hole, whilst, like, because, like, if you look on like TV shows, and I assume they do this in real life, but I've never obviously seen it. They look behind the doors when they're clearing rooms.
Because of course, like, there's going to be two dudes on either side of the door when you're coming through. Of course, there are.
I don't know. And the fact that he's done that before, and I mean, I know why they didn't give him the helmet, because...
Oh, sorry, folks. I appear to have been disconnected.
Bullet.
Sorry.
Hamish is replicated.
Whatever happened in the last 20 seconds is not on the tape, sorry.
The proton molecule is remade, Hamish.
Yeah. Sorry, what were you saying, Chris?
Chris was just talking about the helmet.
They've given people helmets in the past. I mean, it felt a little bit like it was for cinematic reasons, but
I think it was a bit cinematic. But like I say, I he didn't need the helmet. The atmosphere is breathable. Helmet's not going to stop a bullet. And also, I think it's got a little bit of the sort of like oldie styley war film where the captain has like a pistol.
Yeah.
It had that kind of feel to it. Do you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have the helmet. Like, he's too cool for that.
Is this a bit of a suicide mission for him?
I don't think he went into it thinking that. I think he wanted to capture Marco. It was only Philip turning up that sort of prevented that. Really.
Philip
always fucking things up.
Marco looks quite a bit different from when he was a prisoner. Like,
well, he was more dishevelled and stuff, wasn't he? He'd been travelling around. Obviously, this is him all slick, you know.
Yeah,
and at home in his own bridge, you know. So, I don't have a problem with that. Yeah,
no, don't have a problem with it. Just an observation that
I'm going to put the kettle on.
Yeah,
I hope it fits him. Anything else to suit him? Hey, Chris?
Sorry?
I said, do you think it'll suit Drew? The kettle. He's going to put the kettle on.
Oh, he's going to put the kettle
right,
on.
Right, never mind. That joke just completely failed to land. Any complaints, please direct them to the email, not to me personally.
What are they complaining about?
When you said you're putting the kettle on, I said, do you think it'll fit? And then I said to Chris, do you think it'll suit him? You know. Yeah, I know, but Chris... The problem is, Chris didn't hear me, so I had to say it again, which made it even worse.
You.
You were just ignoring it. Sorry, I thought you were. I thought you hadn't heard me. I thought you were. Yeah.
I
made it worse. Okay, you can blame me.
I thought
there
was something that I didn't hear.
No, you. But it was just shite. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I appreciate the effort.
Thank you.
So yeah, really, like I was thinking after this episode, like even though I enjoyed those final three episodes, the actual like laundry list of things that change,
yes, very little,
is quite little. Like, okay, Avisarella no longer CEO of Earth. That's a big one. Marco about to attack Earth.
I mean, that was literally the last ten seconds of the episode.
Yeah, and also probably could be easily is going to be recapped in the first.
Yeah.
We already know who Philip is, right?
Yeah, we knew who he was already. Yeah.
Or did we know that? Did we learn that in this series season?
I think we knew that before.
We didn't know his name before.
Ah, right. Okay.
But we didn't. We got early on, I think it was series two, we heard that she left someone behind at some point. And then later, she talks to Drummer, who knows who it is, and finds it's her son. And then, finally in this series, she asks Fred, I think it is, to try and help her to locate him before his father gets him killed. So that's when he gets named either the third time or either series three or series four he gets named.
Oh, we get Fred coming back as well in these three.
Yeah, it was cool, and his hair was cool. It looked a lot younger, sort of hair.
He does look much younger, yeah.
A bit belterer.
Shaved and cool, belter. Cool hair, yeah.
Belterer.
More belterer, like belterer. Yeah, more belterer, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, he did look very earthy in...
Yeah, true.
But we also learn that he's the one who sold out Marco's ship for political reasons. Drummer doesn't like that, so Drummer resigns essentially, and all that sort of.
So what's going to happen to Drummer is a big hanging question between series four and five as well. So that is something that it didn't change. Well, to be fair to this series, the Drummer and Ashford stuff does have a bit of an arc through it, and it should have been bigger. Should have been more of the story, I think. But what are you going to do? But I think that is something that does change through from the start of the series, because obviously it ended last series with the coup on the ship.
Exactly.
You know, Ashford versus Drummer.
A cow on the ship?
Hey, he's taking advantage of my Scottish accent. Yeah. So, you know... what do they call it? A mutiny.
Mutiny, that's it. I liked... What I did like about this series quite a lot is that we did get to learn more about Cash Ashford as a character.
I love it.
That's what I'm saying. The Ashford and Kamina stuff could have been a lot bigger proportion of each episode quite easily.
I think that's in big part just a charismatic, charming actor as well.
Yeah, and the two of them are really good.
Making a part bigger than it was probably written.
They could have even stretched out the part where they were hunting down Marco and
they could have been the ones to discover the fake ship and escape from it before it blew up, and you know, they could have made more of that instead of making it a weird, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, a Deus Ex Machina type thing, really, for Avisarella's story.
Yeah, but also they do. With the slugs and the eye thing and stuff like that, they could have condensed that into one episode entirely on the underground of the alien structure.
They more or less
turned it into like Yeah, and did it a horror, like do Jen, just like commit it to being a horror.
They put all the pieces in place for that, and then didn't do that, which is weird. Because I know it from watching Ty and that guy, like I know that's the kind of thing he loves. He would love to, like that's the point of that, but they just didn't deliver it. Yeah,
it's a very old, like they planned
to do it pre-production, and then in post-production they just did a very formulaic chopping up.
I wonder how much of that was.
Yeah, that could be right. Yeah, that's how it feels.
Having a new publisher, you know, having Amazon, was it Amazon that they took over?
Yeah.
Sci-Fi for three and Amazon for three, and I wonder if they had any input or interference based on the previous series, and they tried to. Mm-hmm. If there was a lot of compromise,
I think I said this last time, but it does feel like they were trying to do a reset.
To some extent, but then they didn't change anything.
It was a bad reset.
It was a bad reset, It was a warm reset that didn't quite refresh any memory locations.
A wet reset that required lots of wiping.
Love it.
Kinky.
Yeah. Right, well, are we missing out anything?
I think we're, well, I mean...
Bobby, we've got the Bobby stuff we haven't really...
We haven't talked about that cool big incident. Well, yeah, we mentioned the very end of it by talking about the news and everything, but we didn't really talk about how it built up.
But sort of Bob. There's one bit that annoyed me, right, where Bobby's in that hotel room, which is lovely. I love that that's got an actual... I think that's the only room on Mars that we see that has an actual window.
Yeah, because that was the point of him realizing she had money, wasn't it? Because look at this is a fancy hotel room because it's got windows.
Everybody else is going to be in domes, apartment next to apartment, so a window doesn't, you know, your window would be into next door's house kind of thing. But this is a window onto actual Mars itself, so that's fucking cool. But yeah, when the boyfriend says, like, I saw right through your act, like, you're not doing consultancy because you've got lots of money. Like, consultancy can pay really gets fucking
a lot of
money.
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's like, there's no...
Like, your bullshit excuse of you're getting money from consultancy doesn't add up. You must be doing crime.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a leap in that,
Does every spouse of a consultant constantly feel that way? Like, are you a mafia boss?
Well, I'll tell you what, a lot of consultants are shady bastards who go to the Middle East to make extra money, you know?
She should have just gone tomato.
Yeah. This is going to make me sound like a bad person in the Drew sense of it, even so really bad, is that, you know, when you hear about people who have been like, and they always paint it as, like, this family man who went to do a job in Afghanistan or Iraq or whatever, and then he gets captured and killed. And it's like, but do you realise why he was there and what he was doing?
Yes, you know? Exactly,
This is somebody who's not just a soldier doing his duty. This is somebody that's actively exploiting the local people to make money.
Yeah, or you're either
exploiting
CIA
a terrorist situation.
MI5. Or you are a corporate consultant just ripping off their assets and taking it for a colonizing power.
So those kind of, when I see those stories, I always think, I always immediately see through that, and I think, oh, this is terrible. You know, they're trying to make it look like, some poor family man who was just making a buck for his family. No,
he's
there's jobs.
He's just a painter and decorator.
Yeah, that's what they always sort of say. Oh, he was just somewhere.
Hitler was that.
He was an architect or something. or he was helping to rebuild after the war. No, he fucking wasn't. He was exploiting.
Rip off all their fucking assets.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
But that's the narrative that goes with colonialism, isn't it? We're the white people that are helping them and fixing things, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to get a drink. You two can pick up something else after that mini tangent.
Okay. A side note, not particularly important. When the Belter guy shot the prisoner in front of Ashford. Because he killed the other Belter. Like, I get that. You know, like, and Ashford got that. And I kind of, I don't want to say I liked it, but like...
I love Ashford's reaction to that. Like, that's not how Ashford wanted that to go. Mm. But he's working with Belters. And you just kind of see him go, like, he doesn't even say anything to the dude. He doesn't even say, you fucking idiot. He just sort of goes, just has a little sigh, like, fucking Belters. And then gets on with it, which I love. It's like, what are you going to do?
And I mean, you know, obviously I don't condone killing prisoners, but at the same time...
He was a prick.
And he was a prick. That's it.
He was a prick. He had it coming. He threw a tooth.
I mean,
at
he
me.
Did. He did kind of have it coming.
Yeah,
I'd forgotten that. He's the one that gives away that Mars are actually, or at least some faction of Mars are actively involved in this.
Yeah,
because
he says
Mars will rise or something, or new Mars will rise. Or something.
His character was a little bit comic book as well. The way he has that turn, like he basically Jekyll and Hyde moment, where he's like it's sort of for future. Like that was a bit odd.
They've had all the time in this series to build those kind of scenes the way they did them in the past.
Like if he'd been a character that we went to every now and then, and we saw his story, like it's just but. Going back to Bobby's boyfriend, some of this may be jealousy, but I don't like him. I don't like him. He's too cut out, perfect boyfriend who she's being a bit of a dick to because situation, you know, like it, and using him for sex. Kind of, it was a bit too. The Expanse doesn't do obvious cat. It doesn't do stereotypical, carbon copy characters, and that's an example where they did, and that it's a little bit disappointing. He could have been a more interesting character.
Yeah, he was
this
very
series
boring.
Seems to be guilty of that in a
couple
of places.
Yeah, it was just boring, yeah. And that consultancy thing made no sense. Like,
what you get from...
No fucking sense.
Yeah, you don't make that leap, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like there was some sentences missing from the conversation.
Yeah. No, he is just boring. It's the same reason I dislike... similar reason to why I dislike... and he gets another scene at the end. Bobby's nephew. Just something irritating.
He just irritates me. Yeah, and she was.
Well, he did a very irritating thing because, even though it's not his fault, admittedly, but it's like so. It's become somewhat apparent through this series. One of the revelations of this series is that because since the Ring Gates, it's been generally observed that Mars is a dying society. Their goals have become redundant, and they're deciding whether or not they want to adapt to basically becoming Belters 2.0 or to what cling on to a dream where an arbitrary dream. Like they're obviously going to.
Well, it seems like an older generation of Mars still do try to hold on to that. Reading between the lines.
But who's going to, well, not to put it in capitalistic terms, who's going to invest in Mars?
Yeah. Which people are going to carry on the work if they don't have
him getting science / engineering training, he's going to be off through the Ring Gates. Like, he's going to be fine. Like, his skills will still be required.
But they said they put him on the terraforming project.
Oh, no, but he's going to learn stuff there, and he's going to end up through the Ring Gates, I think.
Yeah. Well, everyone will, or die on Mars.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, you could still terraform Mars. They're still having a planet back at home that's also habitable. It's still not a bad idea, but it's going to be it's going to be a different situation.
Also, it's going to take longer because they're not going to put as much resource and energy into it, and people aren't going to be as keen on that as they are going to a planet where
They're going to go and get a ton more resources. So long term, it might actually make the terraforming easier.
Well, I was thinking, like, what about protomolecule? Because they were talking about protomolecule helping to terraform Mars.
Whatever
happened to that?
Yeah, that could be, yeah.
Can Mars not be the protoplanet, the protomolecule planet?
Right, but who has protomolecule anymore? I'm trying to remember.
The Ring Gate is still is active proto-molecule technology.
Once they do that, I think it becomes immutable. Just going by the sort of gist of things in the series.
They spend it. They spend all their proto.
Yeah, they spend more power than they become less adaptable and sort of specialize, it seems like to me.
But again, briefly, the problem with Bobby's nephew for me is you never really get a sense that he understands what he's done and is sorry for it. And I think in this case, I think it is the acting. I just don't think he quite.
Yeah, it doesn't get it across.
It's just facial expressions and stuff in situations where he should look like, oh, I've really fucked up. I'm sorry, Bobby. Like, I fucked things. And she could be like, it's fine. You're a kid. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, but also reversifying it a bit. Like, he was making steady money on a sort of a little criminal side project, right? Was it being run by Martin?
Eli or whatever his name. Yeah, yeah.
Eli,
what's his name?
Isai Martin is his first name.
Right, was it being run by Isai Martin?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And then Lili. He was in safe hands.
Yeah,
he was all right. And then Bobby come along and stick her oar into it.
Well, I do love that Bobby went from rules following law is law, we're on the side of good, we follow the rules, to criminal, full on criminal, really good at it, really committed to it. Like I she does go, and it's a very quick transition, but it's believable. And it makes her actions early on believable and her actions towards the end believable.
I don't think it's necessarily a quick transition, because she's been being disenfranchised for Mars for the bulk of her character's time on the show.
That's the context that makes it, yeah. Something clicks at a certain point and she's like, oh yeah, Mars is dead. So yeah, the conditions
Mars
change.
Is dead and they keep screwing me over. Why am I being so foolishly loyal?
Yeah.
But then again, there's the when she calls Abisarella at the end, that's a lovely, because you wanted her to take Abisarella's offer.
Yeah,
up
you did. All along we wanted to do that. Working together,
and then she literally waits till the worst possible. And I love Abisarella's like, Bobby, your timing sucks.
Yeah.
It's great.
I'm not the CEO of Earth anymore. So
but Abisarella
could have done with you.
Like, I mean,
well, she still needs her for whatever she does, I reckon.
I mean, to be honest, it was such a close election. So we're saying this is a non-partisan world or a one-party, you know, planet or something. Right?
Yeah.
Like, if I was Gao, I would totally have Abisarella in my cabinet. Like,
I think it's at least in a fiction like this, it's you want to use her experience, but you're scared of her as like a power. Like,
well, look at how she was as something goes
slightly wrong for you, is power going to gravitate back towards Abisarella? You know, like I don't think so,
because she wasn't like that with Mann. She wasn't even like that with Erin Wright.
That's true.
Yeah, she liked being. She was the power though.
Gao was the power sitting behind them.
She was doing everything that she wanted.
Yeah, well, and Gao was working with Abisarella. Gao was, what was she, like, second or third vice CEO of Earth or whatever?
VP of Earth.
VP of Earth. So I don't necessarily see that being a problem.
I think practically it's not. In reality, it's not. But I think in fictions like this, they always that's the thing they always say is, like, you can't have another powerful person. It's, you know, it's a low...
It's a 51-49 election, right? Like, I'm sorry, that
kind of reinforces that point, though. Like,
but it was a bit like with the Brexit thing, right? You had a 52-48 split, right? So that obviously means that it was close. So you don't go for the hardest...
I may have mentioned this before. In the original, as it was originally constituted in American elections, for the first few elections, the candidate that won the election would become president, and the candidate that came second in the election would become vice president.
I mean, obviously that's not great.
And it's a bit... So, I mean, your argument is a little bit... Like, I do get it and I agree with you, but at the same time,
Why
didn't Trump make Kamala vice president? It's a bit
That's not the same at all.
It's a bit like that.
No, it's not.
Why not? Because that was a close election.
I think they were entirely different ideologies. Abisarella and Gao, like, they align on a lot of issues.
You say are different ideologies, but A, not really, and B, Gao and Abisarella...
Yeah, they were both capitalist ideologies, but they were different.
But my point is, Gao and Abisarella had opposite ideas of, in terms of big problems, like the ring gates. Like, they had opposite ideas of what should happen with the ring gates. So they are the closest we get in this world to in opposite factions.
Okay, and also Abisarella wasn't really doing great at domestic policy, was she?
No, not at all. No. And I do agree. To be clear,
she was a big picture thinker all along, though. Abisarella.
This is me being an apologist for the show. I do agree with you. I think you're right. Yeah.
As a consultant, have her on as a consultant or something like that. You know, like, it's
some of these she could get rid of easily if there was any problem.
I mean, to be fair, we don't know what position she's going to be in Gao's.
She doesn't seem to. She seems to be departing completely from there, the way she's talking. You know, she's.
But we didn't... can't believe a word coming out of your mouths right now.
What?
Don't even bother to try and mislead me. I'm not going to believe or disbelieve anything you say.
Why do you think everything we say is aimed at misleading you, instead of just being conjecture?
I don't think everything you say is aimed at misleading me. I think you're just either, you're either misleading me or you're not. But either way, I cannot.
No, to be fair, we're very clear. When I'm being straight with you, I make it very clear that I'm being straight with you. And when we're misleading you, we also make it appear that we're being very straight with you. So it's easy to tell the difference.
Right, gotcha. Yeah, okay. I mean, don't get me wrong, you might not be lying, but also this is the exact kind of
have
thing
we ever
you would
lied to you before? Oh, never mind.
Yeah.
It's like you're on a position.
Hang on a minute. Yeah. Because like even Miller didn't turn out to be dead, and then he extra turned out not to be dead.
But I was clear. No, I didn't see. Okay. But I did say I did admit to you in before we recorded this show. I did admit to you in private chat in this Space Versions chat that yeah, I'm going to have to go back and admit a few things over this, and I've owned up now.
Yeah. I don't like have a problem with it. Like I appreciate you keeping me on my toes.
Well, it's more we're trying to not spoil the fun for you.
We are very much enjoying it from through your eyes. Like my slightly jokey description says, we're sort of we're enjoying it
because of the nature of what we're doing here. Like we are, you're looking at things more closely than you would otherwise, and that's going to give certain things away. So a little bit of misdirection to not spoil surprises for you, I think, is we're not doing it to be dicks.
No,
that just happens.
And I appreciate the shock. what was the one thing? Oh, the drummer dying.
I really thought Drew had pushed that too much and you were just going to see through it. I really thought Drew was over-egging
the pudding. What is it where she almost dies?
When she gets crushed. I mean, she does. It does.
Oh, yeah.
If none of us had seen after that episode, Drew would have been completely believable.
What I was doing was making the case for what I thought first time through, which is like, yeah, in terms of how you make a show, that signifies she's a goner,
Yeah.
I didn't think she was dead.
No, I know.
I thought she was... I was more convinced she was dead after you had threw me off the scent.
It's a nice surprise.
Yeah.
It was a nice surprise. Okay, so one of the things about this that I'm a bit curious about is that they choose purple a lot for the interior of the alien structure when it's sort of switched on, the color purple.
I thought it was more blue.
Thought it was kind of a blue. Yeah,
it was blue.
The bit near the sort of climax of it all shutting down.
Oh, there's a bit.
It's quite
blue.
Bright and it looks quite blue then.
So I see some blue.
Like where they're all looking around and the walls have started reacting and everything.
Have you got one of those things that makes colors on your monitor red at evening time? Because this is one of the many reasons why I don't fucking use those.
Yeah, they fuck your life up a lot, yeah.
Actually, I don't think I currently do, which reminds me, I'd probably want to put it on. But let me put up a... I do like the red light things, but... But this looks like... Is this where I'm going to show my ass right now?
What?
That's purple, right?
Oh, that is purple.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's purple.
Yep. I thought
you meant like the way it all lights. When the power surge or whatever it is happens, everything's got like all the little hole bits in the structure show up blue.
Yes, there is blue bits,
and
there.
That's kind of like the rest of the protomolecule structure, like the ring structure and stuff. It's got that weird sort of although it repeats as a pattern, it does have like holes in it and stuff. It's kind of weird. Like an alien design thing.
I don't know if this means anything because this here goes blue.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah, the light's between things. Yeah. Like the backing light, the background light.
Also, my arm is fading away.
Well, you can regenerate it. We've got the technology.
You've got to make your parents fuck.
Oh God!
Oh yeah, that's what it is. You're fading away because of time travel.
Oh right, yes, the
overrated 85 time travel.
Yes, I agree.
I liked it.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. It's one of those films really that
our generation
it, yeah.
just fucking clings to and won't shut the fuck up about. It was a good film from a million years ago. Watch other films.
Yeah, it's like Ghostbusters. I'm a big fan of Ghostbusters, and I'm probably a wee bit more evangelical about that than I would be about most 80s films. But you know, it dies down after a while once you've watched it a few more times. Alien is one of the pinnacles of filmmaking in Western filmmaking.
Very good,
What do we think of Miller's new form?
I love it.
Yeah, the sort of scrap robot thing is very scrap odd.
Yeah. Triangle dog is what it is in my head.
Yeah. You have to duck down, Chris. You can't go. If you go from side to side, it moves the camera view. That's better. That's stay there for a second. Let everybody see.
I love it when science lady's sort of talking to it, and she goes like, "Miller."
Yeah, that's it. Like, yeah, sort of holding one of its, well, for want of a better word, hands.
Yeah. And I think Miller goes, "I've looked better."
And also that picture, that's what I mean about the light. You know, it's like a blue light coming through everything.
Yeah.
Right, Chris.
That's daylight.
Come back, Chris. Come back.
Is that daylight?
That's daylight. Yeah.
You might be right actually. Of course, because everything gets stripped down and the water then recedes and we're revealed a lower level. My apologies, Chris. Well done.
It might not be.
So there was purple light and everything else is daylight. Yeah, it's a sort of pale blue from the atmosphere color.
Does it move? Do the panels move away or something? It definitely looks like daylight, doesn't it? Yeah.
I think science might make it transparent. Might be magic windows.
Lights, you mean?
No. Magic things that aren't transparent and then are when you switch it on.
Okay.
Space curtains.
That sounds like, I don't know why, but that sounds like a euphemism.
Well, it did have an interest. It had almost I liked him, but he didn't have any eyesight, did he?
Miller.
No, because she had to guide him. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. She sort of
He couldn't see the orb thing.
Yeah.
Well, could he see anything?
I imagine, but not the thing.
Yeah, I imagine sometimes we get a first person view from Miller, right, where he's seeing things in kind of like predator vision with nodes and connection. I think he's still seeing like that, but he can't see this.
The thing doesn't show up in that vision, yeah.
Because it's a weapon used against his people.
Also find out what those locust things are.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that I didn't think that really got resolved, and then I remembered this little bit.
Yeah, I had no recollection of that, and it doesn't really serve any purpose in the episode.
Yeah, again, it doesn't really do anything to...
But they do seem to be like a defense mechanism of the place
of the structure, yeah.
Except they don't seem to, do not that very good a job, because
they're not very good at it. Yeah, she just ducks.
Ducks, yeah. And they were going through the eye, so were they not chasing after something?
I think they were attacking the eye. I think they recognized the eye as a hostile thing, maybe something. I don't know, really. I don't know whether they were going for her and Mist or whether they were going for the again. That those bugs, take them out of the show, makes no difference
at all. Yeah,
okay, yeah, okay. So we'll add it to the list of slugs and blindness, and yeah, okay. I'm sort of, quite happy to, if this was a 5-episode series, it would have been great.
Yeah.
Or they could have condensed, like they did before, they could have spread the book over, or condensed the books, shorter books and mini stories.
Or like we said, put other storylines in there as well. Yeah. Some Marco.
What they did in some of the other series. Yeah.
Flesh out the Avasarella stuff a bit more, because that felt a bit cursory.
I'm pretty sure the Fred Johnson stuff wasn't all from one book. I'm sure there's a chunk of that from one of the novellas.
So now, having finished the scene, how do you feel about it? I mean, I think we may have coloured you a bit towards it by
talking about it. We were getting a bit bored by ourselves.
Has it, put, Is it? I can't think of how to phrase this, but is it giving you a downer in regard to the show, or is it just like you? This is a weak season.
It's more of it's a weak season, but that's largely on the back of what you're saying, and how you were looking forward to getting back more into the thick of it rather than the space western that seemed to faff around a lot and not really move the needle or have a point.
Yeah.
It seemed that there were a lot of character pieces here, but that a lot of the characters then acted out of character.
It seems like they were using characters that had been well established for plot points rather than using the character. And I think that's why Naomi seems a bit weak at times. That's why Amos seems a bit like old Amos, you know, before we understood him and he had grown a bit and gotten some more nuance to him. And why not just introduce some more throwaway characters for those things, you know? It almost seemed, to be honest, like the Ross and Ante crew were almost not involved. In fact, if you'd taken them out...
Amos didn't to some really extent, do that much.
It was only really Jim that was involved in anything.
And he wasn't himself.
And he could have been any other diplomat sent by Abba Cervalo.
Again, really. He becomes himself again in these last three episodes.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like they could have just used. It's like they threw other characters' parts into main characters who already had a will.
I didn't hate Naomi in this series.
Didn't hate her. She doesn't do much, and she's not.
She doesn't do much, but when she's on the ship and she's. You know, teaching the young woman about the batteries and stuff. I like that.
I like those bits. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying it wasn't like the show would have fallen apart without it or anything, but it was. I feel like we saw a more like it previously. It seems that we only really found out about Naomi when she was trying to confront something or face something off, and in this episode, in this series, she seemed to. Reveal herself in a more natural way, like we learned more about her, but not because she had to in order to like win an argument or beat a confrontation. It was just like she just felt like she was just
she becomes motherly as the sort of whole.
Yeah,
I mean it's quite disjointed, but that's basically what her arc is from the start of this once she discovers Marco's dangerous
and
again,
she does have that bit where she's helping Lady to escape. That was cool.
That was good.
Maybe Miriam is better in this season than I remember.
You got a point. I forgot about that, but
they always give her the voice of doubt a lot of times, and I think that's sometimes a bit unfair. And this time she didn't. She was the voice of. Nurturing and diplomacy and often common sense and experience.
It's a wee bit I'm being slightly apologetic here on behalf of more shaky writing than is usual, but I'm going to say that in a way that kind of makes sense for her because
it's also a little bit sexist though
I think that's why they avoided it before, but
she's the engineer, she's the practically minded one who solves engineer. She's also the voice of reason for sure, which could be cast as a feminine, but then this season she is very much the mother
because she's
physically weakened by her, you know, she doesn't take to the drugs, she can't go down on the planet. There's a lot of
that was done awkwardly as well, though. But we discussed that back.
It did feel a little bit sexist to me. Not to the point where I'm gonna, you know, object to it very strongly. But it had that. She's a wife and mother now, is she? Like,
she's the ship wife.
Yeah, a bit.
But I guess it's a show that does great female characters. Yeah, she
generally.
Was always sort of Amos's big sister as well, though, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, could Alex have done it? Because Alex growing up on Mars...
Well, Alex does do the family stuff with new family, doesn't he? He's the one that, like, don't make the mistake I did, don't leave it too long.
That was the bit where he was half decent, actually, yeah.
Yeah, it was nice, it was nice. And when he sheds a tear, when Felicia, is it, the daughter?
Felicia.
Is talking to them, saying... Yeah,
it's Felicia spelt wrong, but it's annoying. Space Felicia.
Yeah, when she's talking to her, and she's like, they're allowing her to go off to university, do what she, and, you know, the family's happy again, and he sheds a little tear. That was actually quite touching, a little touching touching moment for Alex.
Yeah, not a bad Alex. Not a bad season for Alex, to be honest.
Yeah. But a very... So yeah, sort of in a vacuum, how do you view this season? Like, imagine for a moment you hadn't watched it with us. Like, how do you think you would feel about it? And are you excited about the setup for the next season?
Yeah, the setup was kind of good. There were bits in it. There were substantial amounts of bits in it that I liked. But the fact that so much of it seemed inconsequential kind of left me a bit flat. But
I don't mind storylines being inconsequential so long as they're entertaining. We get character growth, you know, and they're entertaining in their own right. But my problem is it was neither consequential nor particularly
exactly. Yeah. It could have, because a lot of the people in the space western bit, they weren't actually like. A lot of them weren't actually that interesting or memorable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the more memorable ones was, like, Science Lady, but she was a relatively, like, normal person.
Those are seasons. You get side characters like Prax. But, I mean, Bobby kind of started as a side character. You know, Drummer's kind of a side character. You get really cool side characters. In this show, the best we got was Science Lady. I do like Science Lady a great deal. I think
she comes into her own in the last few episodes.
But I know what you mean. Like, there's no standout.
But none of the others. Like,
yeah, would you?
The belters were all like,
generic.
All of the, you know,
I mean, it's Amos's girlfriend who was like, I liked her, but again, you didn't really get enough time with her to really fall in love with her.
Her sort of, they didn't really explore enough why she would suddenly feel torn, because they make it clear in all the... With her and Murtry in private, she is, like, totally non-hesitant to back him up.
Mm.
And she will also be the sort of... You know, she'll try and voice of reason it a little bit to him as well. And she'll not countermand his orders, but soften them. Like, when he says, defend all our stuff, and she said, but be smart about it. We're outnumbered.
Yeah.
Let them come to us if there is going to be trouble. You know?
I did actually like and buy her resolution, though. I think intellectually she gets that Amos is telling her the truth, Mertry's bullshitting her, but she's got loyalty. Yeah, I think it's hard to go back on loyalties. And when Amos shoots her in the head, it's not nice, but that did seem to be inevitable.
So when Amos says you made me shoot her, is that
out of character for Amos as well? I think Amos would take responsibility for that.
It certainly felt like he was evading responsibility.
It's more of this little bits of story that they seem to have thrown to main characters that might not have necessarily been, you know, need to be in a main character. Okay, you know, they had all these extra belters, they had all these extra RCS or whatever they were called, people. RCE? Sorry? Whatever they were called. They had a whole squad of them, right? And none of them get to be like a you know, they've got a few speaking parts, or, you know, but nothing really. So why not have more? I mean, they could have done the whole thing. Yeah, it just annoys me how they misused main characters. Like, it seemed like a good thing for Amos to have a bit of a relationship that was a bit more than what, you know, what he'd seen.
And
there was
like moments of it were really fun. There were some nice lines and stuff, but it didn't.
The stuff
felt insubstantial in a way that The Expanse isn't usually.
Yeah. The whole series is just, this whole series four is just
weird.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's like the gears aren't meshing. That's what it felt like. Everything's right. The right stuff's there, but they just didn't quite make it click together properly.
I tell you what, one thing I really quite liked was Esai Martin. Is that his name?
Yeah.
I started off not liking him because part of my general aversion to dodgy cops. But, but then, I actually thought like every layer that we discovered about him made sense. And he had a good on-screen presence and...
I think the Bobby stuff in general, the Mars stuff in general, is it feels more like what I'm used to The Expanse
than the planet
stuff does.
Yeah, there's not a lot to complain about there, really.
One thing about that bit though, we found out that the dumb guy and the mean guy who was mean to Bobby, he wasn't actually necessarily the inside man, but he was probably being sold a bill of goods, wasn't he?
Oh no, I think he was military intelligence or something like that. I think he was a plant.
But he just got a bullet to the face when it all went wrong.
Yes. Oh yeah, he was being used at the same time. But when you sort of like, I sort of made excuses for him earlier. I didn't remember this is how it went, honestly. Like, when I say I don't remember stuff, I'm like, genuinely, there's bits this late in that I don't remember. Yeah, and you were sort of right to say to distrust him.
Mm. But it was because he was stupid, not because he was.
I think he was both. I think he was being used, but also he was under the belief that he was infiltrating them. I think that's my take on it. Hamish.
No, I just think he thought he was taking advantage of something, and he was over his head. That's the way I sort of read him.
Mm.
And I Fair think enough. He got found out, and you know they just took him out as well. I wasn't particularly agreeing with this.
All three of us have different interpretations.
Slightly different.
Because Bobby's there's that bit towards the end where Bobby's sort of checking his record to see who he's worked with before, and what I thought she got from that was that this is a setup. They're being set up by. Well, they were being. We know they're being set up, but he was instrumental.
Well, this is part of that little story thread that I didn't really. The first time through, I didn't really catch all this stuff about Mars being. Because I thought they were. Up until it became obvious, I felt like Mars's involvement with Inaros, as we've discovered, that's the OPA faction that they're involved with.
Ad hoc.
I thought it was just kind of like people like Martin, you know, just flogging them stuff. I didn't realize there was a concerted effort from a faction on Mars. Until the very end of this series, you know, right up until then, it could have just been any old, you know, just people doing what that dock worker boss of Bobby's were trying to just get a cut on things and just not caring where it went and all that sort of stuff. Mm. But obviously, we found that there was actually some sort of concerted effort by some faction on Mars, and I wonder if that faction. I wonder if they must have been around before the rings as well. So I wonder what their goal was. Anyway, is
they
it
might not have been, right?
No, they must have been because there was quite a lot of the stuff about the ships that were built and shipped off from Earth. The ships were built on Earth. They were stealthed up by Martian technology, but not by Mars or Earth. And that all happened really early. And the OPA guy getting hunks.
I don't think that's connected. I think that's just dual PML being very rich and hiring Martian scientists or something
like
that.
So you think that's a separate thing from the current...
I think there's probably a faction on Mars that has perhaps always thought, like, if we teamed up with the Belters, we could take Earth. And I think that's in the military and that. I think
it's the thing about moving the boundary from out of the solar system to the.
I think
so,
but again, that's utter speculation.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe I didn't really. Yeah, when you frame it like that, yeah, maybe it was two separate things: the Mao, Jules-Pierre Mao thing, and this faction, or maybe not. Yeah, maybe it's not a direct connection; just similar technologies that they've been. Making money out of basically nicking from the military, and
it's just because a lot of times in the show only Mars has stealth tech, but I don't think that's I think that's what's believed, but not necessarily true. I think
it is though. I think because Mao got the ships made, using Earth dockyards, but then the stealth tech stuff came from his wherever he got it from dodgy Martians.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean it's unclear whether he
traded for it or whether he
or maybe he
hired,
gave it maybe,
hired, just hired scientists.
Do you think maybe it got out since then or something?
But now, of course, Marco's got it. Yay,
Marco. I'm excited for 9 asteroids heading towards Earth. It's cool.
9.
What if they're
all stealthed up asteroids?
That'd be fucking funny. Yeah, stealth asteroids, yeah.
Did you hear about that we may get hit by an asteroid?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, there's another one coming. Thank fuck.
So, well, I mean, apparently it's a is it 2030 or something, 2035 or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
It's a 2% chance to hit us, but they've actually managed to work out, draw the area where they reckon it would hit. Sad news, we're not in it.
is it also, America?
So we're going to suffer all the sort of horrible post-apocalypse
stuff. We get to enjoy the apocalypse.
Fucking hell.
But it's not that big.
I just want us to be wiped out and just get over
it. It's regional devastation type asteroid.
Regional devastation, and the chances of it actually hitting a population centre are actually very small.
I mean, actually very little of the... If it's just like a... like chance, like, what is it? Earth, like... what's
70%
water. 7/8
water
or whatever, so it's... Yeah. 80% chance of hitting the sea, and then if it hits land, like very little of the land is actually populated. Really,
yeah.
So.
We've literally detonated bombs bigger than that in testing.
So
I don't know. I hope we can hit it. Maybe it'll do something fun. Aliens.
That's why I was against killing Marco. It's like throwing asteroids at Earth. That's fun. Let's see what happens.
It is, yeah. I mean, they teased us with it so many times, especially from Avicerala's fears that they had to do it. And I mean, you could have been forgiven for thinking, if you didn't know ahead, that the sending that ship at the early warning system was the final play of that.
Yeah.
But it was just an attempt to further minimise the difficulty. Yeah. Minimise the chances of them being spotted.
Okay,
so
Chris, complete speculate. I'm asking you to 100% speculate. So there's nine stealth asteroids heading towards Earth. How many of those nine do you think will hit?
I'm going to say none or all. I think
that's none or all. Okay.
None or all. Maybe they might save one.
I mean, I know whether it's some or none, but I can't. I can't remember how many.
Okay, so one gets away. Stopped. At least one. Gets
see, this is why I don't. I shouldn't have said that. This is why I think Drew says too much sometimes.
Yeah,
you could have just left.
Much.
You
that
asked your
much.
Question and left it at that. Yeah.
No, I regret saying that. Can we rewind that? Pretend I didn't
think
say
all
that.
Of them are going to hit.
Hang on, we've got a Men in Black pen. Chris, look at my screen. that reminds me. I wanted to ask you guys to remind me what that pen was called. I'm going to get one. The one that you guys
Safari, have. Lamy Safari.
Oh, Lamy Safari. Yeah.
Lamy Safari.
They're German, like Andrew.
German Lake Andrew.
And just as reliable. That is to say, very reliable.
Very cool.
Very MMIE? Cool.
Great. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I got mine. This is mine, Lamy Safari. I don't know if you can see it.
Uncomfortably, we have the same color with no coordination.
Is there a dark green
version?
Mine
has green ink in it, so...
If there isn't a dark green version, then I'm going to have the same color because I like green.
They do good colours.
They do every colour.
That was a complete side thing. That was a tangent that had no connection at all. It's just something that I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do recommend them. I might do another video about my
Lamy
Safari.
Don't become a fountain pen person. Just use it as a fucking pen and don't be the kind of person who buys a million inks and tries them all out and does little test samples and like just fucking use it as a fucking pen.
Do you think me being a complete stationary nerd, do you think I would go for that? No. I am a complete stationary nerd. I am a stationary nerd. Big time.
But Lamy's is so set up for Hamish's style of nerdery.
Yeah.
But I'm more likely though to get one of something and have other sort of things. I'm not likely to have like 100 fountain pens.
Yeah,
I'm likely to get a nice one. Or it's the same with my mechanical pencils. You know, I've got the only reason.
Oh, let me do them too.
The only reason I've got two of these is one is 0.7, one is 0.5, and it came in a pack together.
But increasingly, I've made this very clear. I fucking hate connoisseurs. They ruin things. This is like a design icon. It's like a masterpiece of design. It's like very efficiently made. It's a good pen made cheaply to be cheap to buy and be fucking reliable and never flake on you. And I think fountain pens are very practical.
I mean, I like writing cards with them because it makes it look like you've put some thought into it.
It's funny you should say it, but
the reason that came back into my head and I wanted to ask you guys, because I keep forgetting, and that's why I did it like there while I remember, because I've been meaning to ask you for about a week. It was actually when I went to the registry office to sign for my mum's documents for the death certificate and stuff, and I had to have to use a fountain pen for some reason.
Yeah, you have to.
I had to sign it with a fountain because I was just about to sign it with my pen. She said, no, don't do that. You've got to use a fountain pen.
Did they say why?
That's interesting.
Maybe because the ballpoint presses on the surface too much or something.
I imagine maybe. That's more like a legal holdover from something.
Yeah,
older,
yeah. It seems like it might just be some sort of.
Like there
tradition.
Was a time when but a she fountain did seem pen to was be... indelible and other pens weren't, like, or pencils obviously aren't. Yeah, so maybe it's just indelibility. Or yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's the kind of ink they use. Yeah, because obviously ballpoint ink is not. It's made to be more. I'm thinking maybe
this law was written at a point in time when there was pencils and there was fountain pens.
Right, yeah.
And they specified fountain pen, you know. Maybe.
I should have asked. It was not the top of my mind at that point, obviously.
No.
You know, other things to deal with when me and Alan sitting there blubbing, you know. But it was just like she went, "Oh no, you've got to, you have to get." So she gave me the fountain pen. I'm like, "Oh right, okay."
I always, when forms say, "Please sign in ink," and they specify in ink. To me, that means fountain. I know it doesn't, but to me, that means fountain pen, not ballpoint, not like an ink pen.
And they also say, we get ones that say black or blue or just black or something like that.
And it's
kind of weird because these days, almost everything that scans and photocopies does it, perfectly well with either. But of course, there might be a lot of legacy equipment in public offices, you know.
It might be
because people do it in pink or something, and that
doesn't. Yeah, you do. Yeah, you might want to avoid that sort of bullshit.
Yellow ink, white ink,
silver.
I've got a silver pen and a gold pen, but they're not meant for signing things. They're meant for craft things, you know.
Yeah, it's
the edges of things on models and stuff.
That's the thing, you can't sign in blood without a fountain pen. So if you ever need to, you need a fountain pen around.
Interestingly, one of the things, and this is a bit of the nerdiness I think Hamish will get on board with, because a lot of Lamy Safari people do, it's not so much about owning a whole set of colours. It's like, it's the inks they get nerdy about, right? And particularly...
that's what Drew was warning me against, though. He was going to get very angry with me if I got into the inks.
But it's the, like, a lot of they consider the best way to do Lamy things is to use the refillable ink drawing cartridges rather than the disposable. I'm a horrible person. I use the disposables, click in and go.
Nothing wrong with that, but the refill, I have the refillable one in it. You just twist it and you just buy a bottle of ink, which is cheaper. And, not wasting plastics.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I like that as well. There's a lot of things that are seen as old-fashioned or traditional for no good reason, but they actually still make sense, a lot of them, and that is one of them, yeah. Mm-hmm. My abiding memory of one house I lived in is that I had, when I was, I must have been about 12 or 13, I had a fountain pen and I had a bottle of ink. And it was like, the one thing my mum was always warning me about is really be careful with that. Yeah. And I was sitting on the floor with a full bottle of ink almost. And I managed to knock it over onto a creamy coloured carpet. And it just
Real reason why I have cartridges, because
you'd make a mess.
I know Drew doesn't care. He'll just go, oh well.
you do get inky fingers. You'll get inky fingers.
I get inky fingers just on the
I kind of like having inky fingers. Oh, you do. Yeah,
I get inky fingers from using a Sharpie or highlighters. I always manage to get ink from highlighters.
I get inky fingers when I'm visited by my octopus lover.
Ah, right. Fair enough. That's it. You got to love that beak action.
Oh yeah, good job. You know, Indian ink.
Yahoo.
Which is proper. Sorry, what?
Yahoo.
Indian ink is used, like, artists like Indian ink. All it is charcoal and water.
No way.
It's just carbon ground up in water. I thought it was something like really sort of special and precious, but it's literally it's carbon and water.
So it's not like taken from a squid or something, you know?
No.
Only one species of squid off the coast of India.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me. Literally just burn something and mix it with water. I mean, it's special kind of carbon, but it's very pure carbon mixed with water.
Oh, like diamond.
Like diamonds, yeah. Black diamonds.
Diamond ink.
Yeah, the only diamonds I have are on tools, you know, with diamond bits diamond tipped bits or diamond files. The amount of diamond is like tiny, tiny, tiny bit. You know, it's like ground up diamond. You know,
I worked in a stonemason's when I was younger.
Was your father a tool maker?
No. Well, he made me. And I'm a bit of a tool. I worked in a stonemason. They had very like several meters wide saw blades for sawing big pieces of stone, and every single like blade notch thing had like a diamond sort of tip on the end. But they're industrially produced diamonds. They're not mine. They're not diamonds.
Yeah, they're created diamonds.
Made. Yeah.
Not farmed by mined by a 10-year-old.
No,
not real diamonds. Well, if child labour is not involved.
Well, diamonds are diamonds being valuable and being attached. Diamonds being attached, being a thing for what do you call them? Engagement rings and stuff was entirely made marketing up by De Beers.
Yeah.
They had this stuff and they wanted to make it valuable.
They warehouse, because I mean, diamonds in the past were hard to mine. Like, you didn't come across them very, but like with modern technology, they're very easy to mine. So they have to stockpile them to keep the price down. Diamonds are. I mean, they have a very. Is it high or low refractive index? High, I think. Right.
High, but
and that, so that makes them sparkly.
But yeah. Manufactured diamonds have a higher refractive index. Yeah. In fact,
oh, really?
Manufactured diamonds are better diamonds in every single measurable way than natural diamonds.
Yeah, exactly. Other than
that's a bit like AI, though, isn't it?
Well, it's one of those things. It's one of those things that the super rich want something because it's the real thing, and you know, and it's like bullshit. It makes no sense, you know.
Sorry, I mean, I think it makes some sense. I think we attach value to it being, it's again, like it's kind of like AI. We attach value to its naturalness, to its foundness, rather than manufacturedness.
Like AI.
I'm not saying we should. Yeah, AI. Like if you two identical artworks and you learn that one was an AI.
Oh, I see. Right. I thought you meant AI itself as a concept. I was like, no, that's not a found thing. It's obviously the word artificial is right there for you to read in the first word. You know.
I mean, I don't scorn diamonds as much as like some people don't, but like they are they're sparkly. It's a very sparkly, transparent stone. I get it if you like that. But to me, there's lots of stones that are much more attractive. I like opals. I think opals are beautiful.
Yeah, there's loads of gems that are nice looking. Yeah.
I'm completely a philistine on this. I'm happy with cut glass or whatever. Like,
I don't see. Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I see what you're saying, but at the same time, those, what are they called, Schwarzschild crystals or whatever.
They're just all fine. Yeah.
You know, it's one of those fake value things that I just don't find any.
I don't like the cut diamonds where they're cut into like facets. I don't find that very attractive. The sparkly, I prefer the like round gems that are round and you can sort of see it more as like a stone.
Real thing. See the real thing. It looks like a stone. Yeah,
yeah. It's nicer.
Hmm. Have we covered everything on?
Have we all done all our notes?
The Expanse.
Lamy Safari.
Sorry, Jack. Yeah, that was my fault for taking us on a side.
No, I'm always down to talk about Lamy Safari.
It's just because I keep forgetting about it.
Lamy Safari podcast. We should.
How many episodes could we do? No, because that's pen connoisseur bullshit.
Yeah, you're going to upset Drew.
Well, we could kick the trend. We could be like,
nothing wrong with trying out a few inks, seeing what you like. Just don't be too much of a dickhead. Just like try a few. Go, oh, that looks nice. It's sparkly. I like sparkly inks or whatever.
Yeah,
that's fine. Just don't take it too far. On don't that make it your whole fucking personality.
Yeah, on that front, I do have a lot of different kinds of paper. I've got... Because I've got cotton-laid paper, which is like the paper money used to be made out of.
Ooh.
And I've got bamboo-laid paper, which is nice.
Oh,
it's nice
big
for
fans of bamboo.
It's nice for
bamboo
a document.
Podcast.
Yeah. It's nice for
Bamboo
documents.
Podcast.
All the breaking bamboo news of the week. I do that.
Yeah, the
love bamboo.
The bamboo stuff is like for if you want to make a certificate.
You can call it the
bamboozlers. The bamboozlers. Yeah.
Oh, we've got to do it now. We've got to do it.
However, bamboo in your garden is a complete nuisance.
No, yeah, exactly.
Well, it takes up. There's a woodland near here that's got like a section of it is just bamboo. Somebody planted some bamboo and it's just fucking taken over. It's great. I love it. It's fine.
Yeah, but it's somebody I know nearby, whose name I'm not going to go into. But anyway, their garden had bamboo in it, and it's like the problem is if you don't keep on it.
Everybody's
gardens have got it, and not everybody wants it. Yeah, so.
But I do think the idea of invasive species is a little bit bullshit. This is one of those like, are we natural or are we not? But like, we're part of nature. This plant has had evolutionary success by being attractive to us. We've taken it somewhere. It's thrived. That's nature happening.
In a way,
like,
yeah,
yes, there's a downside to that. Like, if you take cats to Australia, they will kill every fucking thing in sight.
Rabbits,
but that's just cats. That's cats being successful.
We shouldn't
blame the cats for that.
Yeah.
Will they kill the tarantulas? Because I think I'd know which one I'd rather win out of that.
Yeah, I could
think tarantulas are South American, but
there are other dangerous spiders as well.
Hang on, yeah, dangerous spiders.
This is not a nature podcast. You know,
we're not funded by a big tarantula.
Although my friend from school. Rodders went backpacking in Australia, and he was doing picking stuff in the fields as backpackers do. And someone who he was working with got bit on the cheek by a spider, and him and his typical like tough guy machismo was like, "I'll be fine," and he didn't die, but like there was a hole that rotted its way in the side of his cheek.
Oh my god!
And it's like, because if you look at all the statistics, you realize that like someone hasn't died from like a snake bite since the 80s.
But a lot of
life changing, devastating injuries.
Yeah. Although I will say, like, I'm not arachnophobic. I think humans inherently find spiders a bit creepy because they move weird and they've got a very alien.
Yeah, they don't have the same. I mean, even like a starfish has got the same body shape as us. So
yeah,
it's like that kind of, you know,
they
there's something
conform.
You can see there. But
yeah.
Spiders.
So
are just
I think yeah,
totally
everybody's
different.
a bit queasy about spiders. But and I am like at spiders. Hmm. But when you get to a tarantula, that reads to my brain that just reads as a mouse with extra legs. It's cute again
because it's so big and furry.
It's chunky. It's furry and it's chunky. To me, that's just like an extra legged mouse.
I think most arachnids are in the ocean anyway. I think
crabs, arachnids.
There's a type of crab there's something with crab in its name that is, but there's a lot of I think most of the extant species are either these ocean things, oceany spiders. In fact, there's watery spider things, and then you got on land you've got spiders and what are those other scorpions.
Yeah, scorpions are acne. I like scorpions are cute. Scorpions cute again. The little tails and like I find scorpions cute. Spiders a bit weird about, but do you have an animal that you're phobic of?
I always figured that with spiders, they almost could have evolved to be scary, like that as a defense mechanism. Like they look the way they are
because
they
look so
unlike
other life forms.
I'm a bit. When spiders move fast, I get a bit.
Yeah.
Bats, actually.
Are you really
overcoming it? Yeah.
We've got like a family of bats that live in the trees around these three streets, sort of thing. Yeah.
I was walking along a little, like, you know, those like country roads where the trees hoop over?
Yeah.
So I used to walk one of these lanes like a fair bit to get around. And when the sun goes down, the bats come out and they fly just up and down through this like tunnel of trees.
Yeah, it's funny. That's what they seem to do.
Lots
here. They don't seem to take the open route. They seem to choose
where the insects are. And a couple of times, wasn't even just once, like I was walking along with my hood up, as you do, and then like they just go, and there a couple of times. And it was like, When you get told your whole life the bats will never fly into you, and then
I've never had
a couple
that
of
happen
times.
To me. Oh, they do. Animals that I'm phobic. I suppose I'm kind of phobic, a tiny bit of a spider, not much, but a little bit.
Yeah.
Depends. Sometimes certain spider, if it size doesn't entirely matter and movement doesn't entirely matter, but certain combinations just occasionally make me go, you know.
And it's kind of like, I'm okay
proportion
with the spider
of body
over there,
and, proportion of body and leg,
Not okay with the spider on
Yes. I wouldn't, I wouldn't be picking one up. I wouldn't be picking one up, And snakes, I've never really been able to get myself to touch a snake, even though I've known a few people with them. There's something...
Snakes,
I had a pet snake when I was younger.
Yeah, it's just, it's weird. I've just never. I think I'm kind of mammal racist or mammal.
Well, for me, it's my animal phobia is woodlice. I am repulsed and terrified. Put a woodlouse near me, especially when they turn over. You
have you ever seen silverfish?
No, silverfish are okay. I don't know why they're totally okay.
I thought that would freak you out because that's a similar thing.
Because they move and they're cute when they move. They're like, but no, woodlice, absolutely disgusting. Don't put them anywhere near me, please.
Okay. Well, there you go.
I think they're adorable.
I think it's the concealed. Like, it's the same with like horseshoe crabs. Very creeped out by them. Turn them over and they got all the like legs that are like, ugh. The wriggly legs gets me.
What do Americans call woodlouse? Do they
roly polies?
Oh my god!
I think it might be. And there's pill bug as well. I think they're all very slightly different species, but I think they're.
I feel like I'm going to have to hold up a better card and go bluff, because the way you said that, you might. I'm not saying you're not telling the truth, but just the way you said it made me think. You just said it so assuredly. It was the kind. It reminds me of the kind of conversations you have with Danny, where you try and bluff
try bullshit,
Britishism, you know.
Yeah, we pronounce guitar guitar. I got them. Not that Danny didn't fall for that one, but her friends did.
There you go.
Did really?
Yeah. I think he went and told another person in conversation, and then may have even mentioned it to another British person. So I learned that you call what we call guitars, you call guitars. And they're like, what?
Right.
But we did convince them. Chamomile. We pronounce it chamomile.
Ah,
which is.
Well, I mean, why not? I mean, lieutenant.
Lieutenant, yeah, Bolson. Which is absurd, yeah. But that's the thing. Now she doesn't believe me when I tell her true ones.
There's a joiner. I see it on the somewhere. I can't remember where they are now. Somewhere nearish this end of the journey between Alan's house and my house, and they're called Bosun's Joinery. And I can imagine so many people phoning up and saying, "Is that Boatswain's Joinery?" Because those kind of words, words have gone out of, you know, gone out of. It's like
Coburn,
Gunnels.
What
was the other one I was thinking of? A lot of ship ones. What was the other one? Can't remember the other one now. But there was another. You know, there's a few of these words that have just totally gone out. And I think most British people probably do say lieutenant now. I find myself saying it more often than without thinking about it.
I find that sad. I find that one in particular sad.
It's got a nicely...
It's ridiculous. The fact that we pronounce it lieutenant is ridiculous. And we should preserve that.
Yeah.
Maybe we should change the spelling.
No, that
wouldn't be so funny. It's like,
maybe change the spelling to make it even more ridiculous.
It's funny thinking about this. The other thing about that is place names here, because there was one the other day where I had to write a letter. I was writing at the address on an envelope for someone that was going to, I think it was Gloucester or something like that. And I just wrote without thinking about it. I just wrote it out, and then I realized, you know, it's like you look at it and you go, "Yeah, I've spelled that right." Yeah, because it's ridiculous.
Gloucester.
But you do it, you know. Once you're used to it, you just do it without thinking about it, and it's quite funny. It seems to be an English thing, though, more than anything. I think in Scotland, we have our other... There's a lot of other weird ones in Scotland, but that mostly seems to come from Gaelic and stuff.
And we have very easy to spell names in Wales, like...
Exactly. You know, what's so difficult about that one? You know?
Can I just say, Chris, that background looks really nice.
Yeah, if you weren't zapping out of it so much, it would look really, really useful. Yeah,
I think the zapping out kind of like adds to it. I think it looks cool. It almost, it's like the rays are shining past your head.
I feel like to be like the emperor,
except for the glasses.
Execute order 66, even
the emperor of China.
Right, do we have anything from the Expanse Series 4
to round up?
Is there anything from these episodes or from the whole series that you want to talk about before we round up?
I'm glad we're done with this series, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
I'd have to say I agree. The last few episodes are good, and it is a good payoff, but there is, you know, as we said, there's so many things that just were inconsequential.
I would say if anybody's watching along with this with the intention of watching The Expanse sometime, you can skip. I wouldn't. It's not awful. It's just not as good as the other seasons. But if you skip it, you miss nothing, really.
Well, yeah, there's a couple.
Maybe watch the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, there's the Miller stuff, because the Miller stuff does matter. So it
matters, but it doesn't have a ton of consequence.
Matters to Jim, you know.
It matters to Jim.
Oh no, because we killed a character that we didn't know existed before this series. So.
So there is a bit of that, yeah. But I can't think of.
No, I think I'm good.
And we will obviously be moving on to series 5, and so Chris, what do you reckon might be coming up? Could you have predicted the because obviously we've still got the rings, that they didn't shut it all down. They just took the proto molecule power away from that planet. So there's we've still got the rings. We've still got all the political things that are happening, and obviously we've got the impending attack on Earth. What else, Drew?
Well, it's going to be Marco centric, I imagine, right? Like, how can it not be?
Yeah, fair enough.
So I'm just thinking, we'll learn more.
We go back to multiple, because this season was just one thing, really, mostly. We go back to multiple arcs going on at the same time.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to what Bobby does here.
Mm.
I think she could...
Yeah, Bobby and Avasarala both end up at sort of a loose end, really, don't they?
Mm.
And some of Drew's favourite stuff is coming up as well. I know that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Absolute favourite stuff.
We may see the return of a character.
Yeah.
Not Prax, is it?
I'm not going to say.
I'm not going to say who it is. That would be spoilery.
I would quite enjoy seeing Prax again.
Yeah, well, remember the guy that got the spear through?
Oh, no, it's going to be...
It's going to
be. It's going to be Diogo.
No, it's Shed.
No, it's not.
They found Shed's head and the proto molecule fixed him.
Ashford?
That would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, even within our maybe's no joking, I think that one would be extremely unlikely.
Yeah.
There is some logic internal to this universe, you know.
I feel like they made it very clear to confirm his death because it was so...
poignant.
Because it was such a... big deal, I guess, because it was such an honourable death. They wanted to make sure it was like there was no.
I almost said it was
death.
A cool death, but I want to be like it's a bit odd saying that.
Minus 273 degrees death.
You've got to die.
Yeah.
Sorry.
-273 degrees death. Yeah.
my hope is that if I get in that circumstance, I at least don't lose my cool in the way that, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
And to be fair, Marco didn't either.
He went out on his own terms.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know whether Marco would, had the vote been the other one, because he was never actually faced, it was precarious, but
he was still trying to, he's still trying to charm his way through it, yeah.
Yeah,
I think he kept a decent level of nerve.
Oh yeah, I mean he was certainly more cool than I would have.
Seems his character, seems his character anyway, yeah.
But I would really have hoped to just at least not freak out, you know.
Dignity, bit of dignity.
Dignity and being true to yourself to the end.
Yeah. Like standing on what you know.
Yeah.
This is what I did. This is I. You know.
Yeah, that was the good thing about Ash. That was a great thing about Ashford is even when he did what was. Essentially, he did wrong things. He made big mistakes, but he always owned them, and he always owned up to them.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
he was a very honourable character. Again, bit spoilery, not for the show, but different character in the book because they've amalgamated a couple of different characters to make this version of Ashford. The version of Ashford that does the nasty things is kind of the version of Ashford from the books, and he's an arsehole. So if you're reading the books separately, you will get quite a different view of certain characters because they've assigned various storylines, story threads, attributes, and things to various characters and overlapping and amalgamating and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, because I mean, the existence of Kamina in the way she was, in the way she is rather, that we've got. Buggeration. The existence of Kamina as she is at the end of the series that we've just watched, that was basically a different character, but they ran with it for the books as well, you know, so they go yeah. You know, they change it, so they might find, I can't remember what character names are different off the top of my head, but some people have a completely different name as well. Can you hear beeping? Not stop.
I think that's Drew's breathing.
Oh, was it?
I'm a Drew, breathing.
Have you been breathing people? Again?
Yeah. I did. I have. Done, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Terrible habit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oxygen's terrible for you. I mean, it actually is.
Hold your breath when we're podcasting.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on. It's only going to be like 2.5 hours at the most, you know. Oh, I just noticed as well, Chris, when I see the wider picture, that this is the doctor lady there as well.
No, the doctor lady.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't notice her earlier. Lady. Yeah, she was good.
She was the standout new character for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was kind of our Prax this series, yeah. Not as good as Prax, not as in depth as Prax, but certainly something along those lines.
I think we're done, right?
Yeah, Chris, say something clever or pithy or.
I'm glad that the ugly kid managed to find a family, even if it was the family he chose or chose him and not the one he was born with.
That was fucking awful.
I defend you, ugly boy.
No, he's... No.